I had a rat chew part of my ear off. I'm still missing part of my ear. I woke up at night and there it was chewing on my ear.
A sailing bill must have.
Hello everybody, Julian Charles here of themindsrenewed.com, coming to you as usual from the depths of the Lancashire countryside here in the UK. And welcome once again to our regular New Year's Eve show, which we've had for 4 years running now, each one entitled The Nephilim Boys, because we are each year joined by members of a secret society which, well, until now has been called exactly that, the Nephilim Boys. But there is this year a change. The society has at long last abandoned its age-old rule of admitting only men into its ranks, and so has changed its name. Well, it was going to change its name to the Nephilim Boys and One Girl, but in order to be politically correct, it's gone for the Nephilim Persons, which I think some more conservative members of the fraternity think doesn't quite have the same ring, but it does mean that we shall this year be joined by the very first female member of the group. So all being well, and I'll have to see who does in fact turn up as I monitor my Skype connection here. All being well, we shall be joined at some point during this special evening by Garth Kennedy from Australia, Andy Tidd and Cruzy from South Africa, each members of Like Flint Radio, the excellent Christian podcast that comes out of the Southern Hemisphere, hopefully by Frank Johnson from the US, a writer and researcher for Chris White's Ancient Aliens Debunked project, who's been on TMR in the past to talk about weird and wonderful subjects, hopefully Mark Campbell from the UK, otherwise known as Ed Balsam Clamp, or Campbell Adams, who's joined us in the past to talk on a mobile phone from the bottom of the ocean, and Jeff Bankins from the US, strongman extraordinaire, and last but certainly not least, the inimitable John McMahon, we're hoping will join us, aka Johnny Iron from The Iron Show in the US. So quite a cast there for the evening. Let's see who actually does turn up as the night progresses, and hopefully we'll all be able to join for that annual toast to the new year as the clock strikes 12. We shall see what happens. So let me see who we have here. There are some connections coming through in real time here on my Skype account. And it seems we have Garth Kennedy and Andy Tidd and Cruzy. How about that? Exactly as I predicted there in the order that I announced guests coming on. How are you all doing, my friends?
Hello. It's wonderful to be with you.
Fantastic, Julian.
G'day, Julian. Thanks for the invite.
You're very welcome. It's wonderful to be speaking to you all again. I noticed, by the way, there's a strange sort of helicopter sound there. What's the explanation for that?
I'm really sorry. I had to climb an helicopter today. There's lions on the ground. This is Africa. I feel safer up here. So pardon the noise, but I don't like getting by animals.
Right, I see. So, Cruzy, you are actually in a helicopter at the moment as we speak. Is that correct?
It's a safety issue.
Aha.
Safety first, Julian.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm very glad to hear that you are keeping safe there. How are things generally going with you, Cruzy?
Oh, no, all good, all good. Had a good year. Yeah, I'm glad this year's finished, though. I'm not getting any younger, but it's been a fun one. It's been a great one.
Aha. Well, I am actually getting younger, so I feel sorry for you. Shame about that.
yes.
Now, I hope that you do have some naughty jokes for us, some politically incorrect things, I hope.
Me never. No, I'm never politically incorrect, am I? You know, I might have one or two zingers up my sleeve for you guys. I'll leave it as a surprise for you for later on.
Okay, wonderful. Do you have any news stories to share with us? Because that was the idea this year, that we were going to be not so serious talking about really deep issues, but we were just going to find some things that had amused us during 2018 in the news and to share those things. Have you got anything up your sleeve?
Oh, pretty much. I'm not big on politics, as Andy and GK would know. But pretty much everything in the USA has amused me this year. The political situation and the social situation there. where America leads, everyone follows. So it's interesting to see where it's heading and where every one of us might be following.
Well, I certainly look forward to the jokes that you'll be putting in, Cruzy, but I do hope that you won't have too many Calvinist ones, because this is an Arminian show. Just making that clear for you.
Yeah, I'm not into totally depraved joking anymore. But let's see.
Welcome to the show. It's good to speak to you. So what we'll do then is we'll mute you when everybody else is talking so that we don't hear the helicopter, but we'll come to you every now and again, and we will unfortunately hear the blades going by. But that's for your safety, so we all understand that.
Yeah, just so everyone knows, it's not the blades that stop turning.
Absolutely.
When you mute.
Can I just interject there, Cruzy, just to remind you that, you know, you might be trying to get away from the lions, but if you crash into the ocean, there are great white sharks there too. So please just be careful. Maybe head for Table Mountain or something. I don't know, but don't be up there too long.
You underestimate my piloting skills.
Andy.
Hello.
Hello. How does it feel to be the first female member of the fraternity?
Well, I'm not too sure, actually. I'm probably of the old school where I quite like being called a girl rather than a person.
Ah.
So I'd quite like to keep it as Nathan and boys and one girl.
Well, as you are the only female member at the moment, I will bow to your wishes and change the title. How about that?
Just for all the other girls that might be, you know, hoping to join one day.
So there are more, are there, in the pipeline? Are you trying to recruit people?
You know, I didn't think about it until now.
Okay.
So, but sure, this is fun, and it's a really great privilege to be on the show. Finally, it's really great to be here.
It's great to speak to you, because you were going to speak last year, but the whole thing went awry, didn't it? And we had to change our plans with that. So it's good to be able to speak to you this year. Excellent. GK, how are you keeping these days? You had to slow down, didn't you, with the old podcasting for a while. How are things going these days?
Well, I think I'm on the road back, Julian. Listen, thanks for the invite to be part of this one. I did miss last year's.
Yes, we missed you.
Yeah, oh, thank you. But I'm happy to be back. I just want to say, at the moment, Julian, Australia is being typical Australia at the moment. You know, we've got floods down south. We've got fires burning in my state all over the place. And we've got a massive heat wave that we've just got over. We've got another one coming. It'll probably be around 39, 40 degrees Celsius where I am. So it's typical Australia this time of year. But I wanted to tell you, about 6 weeks ago, Julian, you know, the snakes start to come out of hibernation, and the snakes are everywhere.
Ooh.
And so in my little town where I live, everyone's warning each other about the different types of snakes. And where I am, you know, well, obviously Australia is famous. We've got, you know, 11 out of the 10 most venomous snakes. Did you catch that?
I did, yes.
Yeah. And, but, you know, where I am, we've got one of the worst ones. It's the eastern brown, and they're everywhere. And we also have the red-bellied blacks. And we've had both on our property here. But I wanted to tell you a little story. I'm actually quite fortunate to be here. Not long ago, I was out the front of my place, and I was sort of sitting on the ground, and I was talking to a friend, a mate of mine. He was visiting, and, you know, I was sitting on the ground, and I sort of had my knees pulled up to my chest. I was just sitting there like that, and he says to me, "Garth, don't move." Now, when you're here in Queensland, if a fellow Aussie says don't move, you do one of two things, right? You either run like the Blazers, or you make like Lord Nelson in Trafalgar Square and you become a statue. So I thought, okay, I can't run. I'm just going to freeze. So I froze. He walks over to the fence. He grabs this bit of wire off the fence. I wasn't game to look. He goes over to the fence. He grabs this bit of wire, and he fashions it into this noose type of affair within 10 seconds. He loops it around the snake, gives it a flick, and flicks the snake. Well, obviously it was a snake. Sorry, I should have said. He loops it around this snake that's between my legs, flicks it over the fence within seconds, like within less than a minute. Now, the point I want to give you from this story is it was my place. He was a visitor. He must have come armed with his own snake defense system, because I didn't know there was a piece of wire ready to go on the fence. But within seconds, he had this bit of wire, had it looped, and had the snake out from out between my legs, and it was all over before you could say Jack Robinson.
Wow.
It was a death adder of some sort. We worked it out, because when we flicked it, we didn't kill it. We let it go, because you're not supposed to kill those snakes, by the way, just so you all know.
Oh, okay.
And so it did. It slithered away, and we worked it out. We had a quick look at it as it was going. But this guy's pretty experienced with snakes. So I didn't ask him, but I must in the future, Do you go everywhere you go and you just put that bit of wire on the fence somewhere in case someone's in a bit of trouble with a snake? Uh-huh. That's the takeaway from that. This guy must just carry this wire around with him wherever he goes in snake season.
Yeah.
And because it was my place and he didn't strip the wire off the fence.
Yeah.
It was just there. I didn't put it there. So there you go.
Well, that rather suggests that this is such a common occurrence that he was going around with it in order to do good everywhere he goes. Is it really so common that you would be struck by these things?
I wouldn't say common, but it's not unusual, but it's not common. But I'm just glad he was there. And this guy knows what he's doing. He's a bit of a bushy.
Yeah.
But, you know, Julian, I think you mentioned, you know, that we were allowed to be a little bit naughty on this show. And so
only a little bit naughty. Only a little bit. Are you moving to another story, by the way?
Well, I wanted to talk about knickers.
Yeah, I know you do.
Can I talk about – I want to talk about knickers.
Oh, but that's very naughty. We can't talk about knickers.
I want to talk about knickers. I want to talk about knickers the cow, actually.
Ah.
You know, there's this cow in Western Australia. It's made the news. Oh, I'm certain you didn't think I was going to talk about anything rude, did you?
You said you were going to talk about something rude. We were all ready for that.
Well, naughty. Let's say a little bit naughty. But anyway, we're talking about Knickers the cow. Actually, Knickers the cow is actually a boy. Knickers is a steer, and he's from Western Australia. And if you go online and you can search for a photograph of him, Knickers the steer, he's massive, right? He's so big that he's too big to go to the abattoirs. Uh-huh. Okay, so his owner has said, okay, well, you know, they couldn't take him. This guy, he's over 7 foot tall. He weighs about 1,400 kilos. Now, your average cow across all breeds is like 630, 650 kilos. So this guy is over two times the normal size, and they couldn't load him onto the truck.
Can you just say how tall he is again?
Wow.
He's 7 foot, 7 foot tall.
7 foot.
He's like a car. He's right. Like a sort of small to medium car.
Yeah.
You know, he's 1.5 tons.
Mm. And is he a Nephilim cow?
Is he a what?
Is he a Nephilim cow?
Yes, I think he must be a Nephilim cow, yeah.
How many hoofs does he have?
We'll have to count them. You can look on the photos. If you look online, he's there amongst the herd, you know, and he really stands out. But the owners have sort of taken to him, okay, because he was too big to ship off. And so they're going to let him stay amongst the herd because there is another benefit. Wherever Knickers goes, the rest of the herd goes. Because, you know, cattle stations here are pretty big, right? I mean, they can be the size of some countries. There are some cattle stations here that are as big as Germany.
Right.
So when they're looking for their herd, they look for this big fella. Right, they look for Knickers, and they know where everyone else is.
Is that because the rest of the herd consider him to be some sort of cow god?
Well, I'm wondering if it is that, but they do. They do follow him around, so Knickers is here to stay. He's not going off to the abattoirs anytime soon.
Wow. Bizarre story.
So now you see why I wanted to talk about Knickers.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
So it wasn't rude after all.
No. Come on.
Oh, dear.
Wow. I've got a big beef with cows like that.
The big beef, huh?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you there, Cruzy, because of the helicopter.
Well, I know. I was just saying I've got a big beef with big cows like that. Just because he's too big, they didn't want to send him over to the other side.
Wow.
I've got a rude one here, so I hope you won't mind.
Sure.
So this is not a local story. This is a story from the US, but I have to share it with you because it just made me laugh. So this is from CBS, September the 18th. And the headline is, Police, man rubbed produce on bear behind, then put it back. This is the story from Virginia where a man was accused, anyway, of rubbing his bear behind on produce at a grocery store in Northern Virginia before putting the items back on display. And this man was charged with indecent exposure and destruction of property.
Oh,
and the Manassas police release says that an employee on Saturday noticed that this man was grabbing produce, pulling down his pants, and rubbing the produce on his behind before putting it back. And it says that the store had to destroy several pallets of produce because of this man's actions.
Wow.
They could have sold it at rock bottom prices.
Oh, no. Crazy, no.
Oh, dear. Or shop soiled, even. It says that the authorities have not released a motive. Yes, I don't know how that story has developed in the meantime, but it brought tears to my eyes for a number of reasons when I actually read that. Andy, do you have anything from, I don't know, from anywhere in the world, but from South Africa, perhaps?
Well, I thought like one of the funny stories. I mean, I think in South Africa it's probably quite well known that crime in South Africa is pretty high. We do experience quite a lot of crime, and one of the things that we do experience a fair amount of is things like car hijacking. Mm. There's been a number of stories, even recently, just of, you know, how especially women get targeted, but it's not only women. There would be two cars that kind of come around and box the car in, and then they jump out and try to get the car stuck in the middle, if that makes sense. And recently, there have been stories about how these people that are being hijacked, they are fighting back, so they just decide to reverse into the car behind them and just boot it out of the way, you know. And there's this one particular story of this. The one headline was that she was a granny, but I mean, I'm just going to say she was probably about 45. So I don't know if she was a grandma, but she had children in the car. She drove into her yard through like a electric gate, if you know what I'm saying. So like a buzzer gate,
yeah.
The gate opens, she drives in, and a car comes straight behind her. And you can see the video. Maybe I'll send you the link just if anyone wants to go watch it. But you see this car kind of block the driveway and drive in behind her. And these guys get out with guns and run around the car.
Oh, I see.
Banging on the window, you know, and saying, get out, you know. And she refuses to get out. Now, I mean, in all honesty, I don't know if this is just brave or just crazy, because they could have shot her.
Yes.
But she decided she was going to reverse. So she stuck the car in reverse and she just pummels straight back into their car.
Uh-huh.
They're trying to run into the car. They're trying to get into the car at the same time. And then they reverse, because now she's trying to boot them out of the gate. They reverse, and then she just reverses straight back into them, straight through the road, straight into them. And
they
then jump out the car and start running down the road. So it's a hilarious little video. But, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I don't know if there were actually, maybe there were no bullets in those guns, but, I mean, there were four of them with guns. So it was just crazy. But anyway, I was just like, wow. I don't know what.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. But, that is very amusing. But I must admit, yes, I think if I was in that situation, I wouldn't have done that. I would have said, look, yep, you're welcome. Take the car. I want to spare my life. Thank you very much. Yeah.
And the fact that you had kids in the car as well, at least a part, I think.
Oh, yes.
But I think the funniest story for me, I think, was a similar thing where a car got stolen in Half Bay. Now, Half Bay is probably at least from Cruzy, it's quite far, but it's kind of a really beautiful little place on the coast. And these guys must have stolen the car, and the police started chasing them. So they would have gone all the way up. If you know Cape Town, they would have gone all the way up Constantia Neck, which is kind of through a mountain, little mountain pass, and then all the way down again. And to try and get away, they turned into Polesmoor Prison. They drove straight into the prison gate and got out the car and ran. And, of course, they got arrested because they were actually in the yard. But that, for me, was a funny story of the year. So, yeah, that was like, wow. Okay.
Oh, that's excellent.
Clever.
Indeed. And I'm rather hoping here that it was actually the same people in both stories.
That car
bashed
nice,
up in one. Yes, it would
be. Oh, that would have been nice, yeah. But, yeah. So those are my...
It's interesting that both of those stories involve cars. Is that a trend over there in South Africa for all these amusing stories to involve cars?
Almost everything that's not funny involves cars, no. I mean, hijacking and just people stealing a car is quite a big thing, actually. Yeah, I'm sure Cruzy will back me up on that. I mean, I've had like what they call a smash and grab. Once when I came off the highway, this is going back some years now, but I had my handbag on the seat. Now, that in South Africa is a very stupid thing to do, and I obviously learned the hard way. But this young boy, he must have been maybe 12 years old, and he came to my window begging, and I was at a crossroad. And there were a lot of cars, you know, going past, so I couldn't just kind of go into the road, if that makes sense. So I just said no. So he walked around my car, and he just smashed the window and grabbed my bag and ran.
Oh,
and that happens a lot. That's not unusual.
Mm.
I think the craziest thing is dealing with taxis. And I'm sure Cruzy will have something to say again when he comes back from his helicopter ride.
Yep.
But taxis, they have their own set of rules of the road. You can all be road law-abiding, you know, drivers. But when it comes to taxis, that's just another story altogether. So they choose lanes. They decide to drive in, like, bicycle lanes, whatever it is, whatever it takes, they're going to get their passengers through the traffic quicker than anybody else. And it's
drive on the pavement.
Yeah, on the pavement. They're screwed, you know. They'll do anything. It's just like, wow. Where there's taxis, you know, you've got to be on the lookout for just madness, yeah. And they'll just stop in front of you as well. That's the other thing they'll do. Ooh. They'll just stop. Like, if somebody wants to get out the taxi and they haven't even indicated, they'll just stop, and you just hope that you haven't driven into the back of it.
I think a lot of them come from a stunt driver background, don't they, Andy?
I don't know. I don't know if it's just that they watch movies like The Fast and the Furious and think, wow, this is cool.
it's actually not unusual to drive down the road and one's approaching you from straight ahead.
Wow.
And he's driving on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, that happens.
Just because it's quicker.
Everyone else is stunned. They're so stunned, they just stop the car. They don't know what to do.
I see, yeah. Oh, crumbs. Cruzy, do you have any experience of this hijacking business that goes on with cars?
Funny enough, I've actually almost been hijacked twice.
Have you really?
But that was in Johannesburg.
Uh-huh.
Both at gunpoint. God. And both I was stupid enough to just drive away, which you shouldn't do, because uh-huh. that's when you get shot. But I just decided, well, you're not having my car, I paid for this. And I drove away. And luckily, both times they didn't shoot.
Wow.
Well, luckily, or the big boss upstairs looking after me, mm-hmm. probably the latter.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking I live in a very safe place. I mean, so far, you've talked about car hijackings at gunpoint, and we've had snakes over there in Australia. So, yes. Britain seems really quite a nice place to be at the moment.
We do go to Beirut for a nice relaxing holiday to get away from it all. So, just to give you an idea.
GK, do you have any more dangerous stories from over there in Australia?
Well, we might tone it down a little bit, moving on from Nick as the cow.
Uh-huh.
But I did want to tell you, you know, there's a lot of this I want to change my identity stuff going on. Recently in Australian Parliament, one of our male politicians has decided that he wants to now identify as a woman. He's a pro-life conservative politician, and he feels that if he switches genders, then the abortion, pro-abortion people will have less things to pick on him about. But that's not what I'm talking about. I just want to give an example of people switching and changing their identity. I found this interesting story from Auckland in New Zealand about Letty the dog. Have you heard about Letty the dog yet?
No.
Okay, so Letty's owner is rather fed up with the Auckland City Council with their high registration fees, and there's going to be a new bylaw brought in Auckland where they're going to ban dogs from the beaches between certain hours, and I think it's like 10 a.m. the morning till 7 p.m. in the evening. You won't be able to take your dog to certain beaches, and the price of the registration is just going through the roof. And so she recently wrote to the council to let them know that Letty the dog now identifies as a cat.
And therefore,
because in Auckland, you don't have to register your cat, so you don't have to pay fees, right? Let me tell you, I want to read to you her Facebook message to the Auckland Council. She said, "Hey, my dog decided today that she identifies as a cat. So I'm just letting you know we won't be paying the $135 registration fee next year. And it means we're now officially exempt from the new law not allowing dogs on beaches. Thank you." So
that's priceless.
It's great, isn't it? So Letty the dog is now a cat.
I say, do you know what the response of the council's been?
They chose not to respond to that specific message. They said, we collect registration fees to help ensure dogs are a positive part of Auckland life.
Okay.
The fees go towards a 24/7 response to dog attacks, reducing nuisance from roaming or barking dogs, managing animal shelters, reuniting lost dogs with owners, and education on dogs.
Mm.
But they did not comment on whether Letty's new identity would excuse her from registration fees.
I noticed they didn't mention cat at all in their statement there.
No. They avoided that one.
I suppose it's rather difficult, though, isn't it? Because how on earth can you prove, how can she prove that her dog does, in fact, have this new identification? That's a tricky one, isn't it?
Well, I think with the way things are going, I think any of us can choose be whoever we want to be and, you know, and let anybody else argue whatever they want. I mean, Cruzy can now choose to be a helicopter if he wanted to be.
I identify as a helicopter pilot currently.
Are you trained?
No, but I'm doing well.
Very good.
Can I just say, Julian,
yes.
Many of us would be offended that you assumed his pilotlessness.
Pilotlessness, did you say?
That's right, because he's either a pilot or he's not. So he's either pilotless or he's a pilot. So please don't assume whether he is or not.
Yeah, it was rather bigoted of me, wasn't it? I apologize.
I'm going to assume that the moment he gets the petrol ball for that helicopter, he's going to identify as somebody else very quickly.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm glad we've introduced this theme because later on in the show, I want to talk about a lady who's engaged to a chandelier. I'll talk about that one later on.
Is the chandelier the light of her life? Never mind,
yes,
never mind.
Apparently so. No, apparently that's the case, actually. Yes, indeed. Yeah, I don't know whether any of you came across this one. This was on the BBC News. And when was this? This was back in October. I don't know whether any of you would be attracted to owning such a thing. I don't think I would. This is a feely finger that's being developed for your smartphone. Have any of you come across that one?
No.
It's a little electronic robotic finger that you can attach to the base of your phone. I've got a picture of it here. I'll put this link in the show notes for anybody who wants to research it further. And it literally looks like a severed index finger that you can have at the base of your phone, sort of pointing up the front of the phone. And it can do various things. It can make your phone crawl across the table. So if somebody rings you, instead of you having to reach across to get the phone, it will turn round and make the finger like a little foot, and it'll crawl across the table towards you. Well, as you hold the phone, if somebody wants to perhaps massage the back of your hand or something like that, they can do that remotely with this little finger. It's a touch-sensitive robotic finger that could be attached to smartphones, and it's been developed by a researcher in France. It's called the Moby Limb finger. It can crawl across the desk, waggle for attention when messages arrive, and be used as an interface to control apps and games. The chap who developed it said that people often find this finger rather creepy or weird, but he hoped that it would be accepted in time. Any of you attracted to such a thing? What do you think?
It's all very Adams Family. I don't know.
It is rather. It looks actually, I'm looking at a picture of it here, it looks absolutely grotesque.
Wow.
There's no blood, but it does look like a severed finger. I can't imagine this thing catching on at all.
Wow.
Why stop at the finger? Why not just make two hands so that you can train it to do the dishes? That would be really useful.
Well, I can send you this chap's email address if you want to give him the idea there, Cruzy.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm scared of becoming that lazy. I'll stay away from the weird things for now.
GK, would you like to have one for Christmas, do you think?
Well, yes, I could see a number of uses for that. Like, you could certainly freak your friends and neighbours out with that one if the phone rings and it starts crawling across the table.
Yes, that's true.
but actually, it's rather a bizarre story, isn't it, really? And yeah. Who knows where this sort of thing is really going to end if you think about it. Do they say how far away this is going to be, or is it available now? Or
no, well, he says that he just developed it as a research project, and people have been contacting him saying, hey, can we make this go commercial? But he's, well, according to this story, and this is back in October, he wasn't interested at the time, but who knows since then.
Yeah,
he could have been negotiating all sorts of stuff behind the scenes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very bizarre.
It is rather creepy. And I think that's partly why people find it creepy, because it does seem to suggest, as you said there, Andy, the Addams Families. It's like bringing parts of people's bodies back to life with your smartphone.
Yeah,
not very pleasant at all.
The thing is, I don't know, I just have this crazy thought of, like, the Queen, you know, Her Majesty the Queen, with a cell phone and a finger. Just, I don't know why, but it's just like, I just can't see the two going together. I don't know. It's just bizarre.
Indeed. Why did you think of the Queen?
I don't know. I'm just thinking of the most respectable person I can imagine with a cell phone and having this little finger.
Well, I think that's an excellent thought, yes. If I can find some way of making that picture for this podcast, I will add that, yes.
That would be awesome.
I don't think I have video editing skills for that, though.
Julian?
Yes.
Now that the Queen has been raised, do you often have tea and scones with her?
Not often, unfortunately, no. I would like it to be more often, but unfortunately, you know, my schedule is rather full.
Right. No, I just thought, you know, since the topic had been raised.
Mm. Do we raise the topic of whether you put the jam on first, you know, or cream? Because I'd like to know what your thoughts are, Jill.
I am flabbergasted at this argument.
You wanted the girl touch in here? Here we are.
No. I'm not criticising you. I'm glad you brought it up. I just don't like the idea that people would even question it, okay? Everyone knows on a scone, it's jam first, okay, then the cream. Oh, my goodness, come on. It's jam first.
I'm sorry, DK, but you've already put your foot in it because you said scone. It's scone.
You can't
start lecturing people about whether it's the cream first or the jam first if you can't even pronounce it properly.
Well, it's funny you mentioned it. There's a town in New South Wales called Scone, and it's spelt S-C-O-N-E, and it is pronounced scone. But whenever I'm down that way, I annoy the locals by calling it scone. Absolutely hate it. I almost get run out of town. It's filthy looks all round.
What you need now is one of those phones with a finger while you do it.
To come to the way as I'm going, the royal way, you know. Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, I am glad that you brought this subject up, because if John McMahon joins us later, this is an argument that I have with him as well. Mm. And, of course, he's always saying that scone in the US isn't like our scone here at all, or indeed scone. Scone. Mm-hmm. He says that it's some sort of biscuit-type thing that you have with gravy over there in the US, which seems to me to be absolutely ridiculous. How could you possibly have gravy with a scone?
Well, we've had that very argument with him as well. That's the most interesting thing, actually.
It is.
I'm
biscuits and gravy, and we were trying to explain to him that biscuits are, for me anyway, at least here, a biscuit is a sweet cookie, isn't it? Mm. A biscuit is a biscuit. So how can a biscuit be a scone? I mean, it's just not. And
quite.
Why would you have... The funniest thing for me in the States, you know, if you ask them about pie... They generally think about a sweet pie, whereas I think in the UK, and certainly here, and I would imagine in Australia, it's savoury. It's a meat pie. It's something that's savoury.
Yes.
So
it is. Well, it's Aussie cuisine. It's what we're known around the world for, you know. Hmm. You've got to have meat pie. You've got to go to your local, you know, servo or shop and get yourself a meat pie, and you've got to have your sauce on it. You've got to, you know, eat it with your one hand, right? But I'll let you in a little secret.
I don't know about the one-hand thing, but this is interesting.
No, you do.
Is it left or right? Does it matter?
I'm looking at my left hand as I'm doing it here, but I guess either is okay. And, you know, you sit in your car and you eat your pie and half of it goes down your shirt and onto your pants. But I'll let you know a little secret.
Uh-huh.
When you come to Australia and you do go to, say, a bakery or a local corner store or wherever to get yourself a pie, for the most part, you probably can get away with ordering either a mystery bag or a maggot bag, because when I was a kid growing up, that's what we called them, mystery bags and maggot bags. So,
a maggot bag?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I don't think I want any of those.
That sounds absolutely awful.
Look, I have to be honest. You should never go into a pie shop and ask for a maggot bag or a mystery bag, but that's what we used to call them growing up, because it was a bit like that. You never know what you were going to get, you know? What am I going to get this week? And there might be, you know, a bit of horse's hoof in this one, or, you know, a bit of snake's head in the other one. You never know what they're going to put in there. So, you know, Julian said all the stories have to be true. So if you're with a group of mates and someone's going into the shop, you know, and you're sitting in the car and say, well, do you want anything? You say, yeah, I'll have a maggot bag. And they knew exactly what you meant. And, you know, and also, obviously, you've got to have sauce on it. So you'd have, and I'll have some dead horse on it, you know, and no one would bat an eyelid. I mean, the younger generation now probably wouldn't have a clue.
Oh, dear.
But that's what you would have. You'd have a maggot bag or a mystery bag with dead horse. And it's Australian cuisine. We're talking about silver service here, right out of your own hand.
Silver service? Wow.
Well, back in the old days it was. Yeah, it was like a lucky dip. You took your chances. They've cleaned up their act a bit now.
I'm surprised you're still with us, GK. That sounds terrible.
I don't know. Was there anything lucky in that? Because I'm just thinking, you know, I don't know how lucky I would feel ever.
So it literally could be any kind of meat stuffed into this pie, could it?
Well, you know, seriously, you weren't sure which, you know, animal's hoof you might find a bit of in there, or whatever floating around in there. There was pretty, pretty odd. Yeah, anyway. But in Tasmania, the specialty is, the curried scallop pies, which are my favourites when I visit Tasmania. And it is a specialty down there. That's they're representing Australia on their scene. Mm. Seriously, if you go to Tasmania, go to any bakery, especially in the northern part of the island, and you will find curry scallop pies, and you will absolutely thank me for putting you onto them.
Are you sure about that?
No. Look, honestly, there'll be no part of a snake's head or a goat's hoof in there. It's not going to happen. Tasmania is known for its clean air, clean countryside, and clean food. So there you go.
Okay, but if I was to go to Australia and actually go to a corner shop and ask for a maggot bag, would they understand what I mean these days? Or would they just stare back at me blank?
They would probably laugh. They would know what it means, but they'd think you're being having a go at them. So it would be offensive, yeah.
All right, yes. Cruzy, have you ever had a maggot bag yourself?
Luckily not. I'm not sure what to say about that. I can honestly say that thought has never crossed my mind.
I have to warn you, by the way.
Yes.
I have to warn you, your blades are sounding very weak.
You're
about to crash.
Have you dropped it down to earth?
It's a special aeroplane. I've got silence on it.
Oh, that's a relief. I thought I was going to hear a big splosh any minute.
No.
Stealth mode. That's what you are. Trust my piloting skills.
I told you guys.
Yes.
Yep. Your sound has improved.
It has. It has very much.
Are you talking about me personally or the machine?
The helicopter.
Because either way, I won't be offended. I promise.
Right.
We're in stealth mode now. We're driving over Angola, over Angola. So we've got to be quiet here. Anything can happen.
I think you gave the game away there by saying driving.
Well.
With a steering wheel.
I told you it's a special aircraft. The way I fly it, you know.
He still thinks he's on his scooter.
Oh, goodness.
Are you flying it remotely with a finger phone by any chance?
No. There's a big stick and there's two pedals and there's lots of buttons. I'm dying to try out these buttons, but my mom told me not to press all these buttons and I listened to her.
Very good. So you sound quite safe then. And yes, you are in stealth mode still. So
yes.
You're not going to crash any moment. That's excellent. So this is because your sound is so good. Perhaps this is the moment to share that hugely amusing story that you found in the news, the particular story that you wanted to share with us, Cruzy.
I can tell you a story that happened to me last night, if I may. I was at work and it's a double story place. And I was sitting in the bottom office and the lady's husband left his keys upstairs in the bar. So she phoned from home and she wasn't sure whether I picked up the phone upstairs or downstairs. So she said to me, after I answered the phone, the first thing she said, I don't know if I'm upstairs or downstairs. So I said to her, well, how high off the ground are you? And then we both lost it. We couldn't speak for about a minute. So I just thought I'd share that amusing story because I'm still giggling about it.
Yes, thank you very much.
Julian.
Oh, dear. Hello.
Yeah, Julian, I've got to go shortly, so I've got one more story that I can share.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to hear about Rusty the Australian Terrier or Pippa the Cat?
Ooh.
Your choice.
We've had a dog that wants to be a cat. Perhaps we better go for a cat that might want to be a dog. Go on, go for the cat.
Okay, I'll tell you a story about Pippa the Cat. Now, Pippa the Cat, Pippa the Cat has used up maybe 7 or 8 of her 9 lives.
Uh-huh.
Pippa the Cat comes from Darwin, right up the top of this big island. And Pippa's neighbour was packing a shipping container to move down to Brisbane, which is just down the road from where I am. And it's a distance of 3,500 kilometres. So, you know, cats being inquisitive as they are, Pippa gets inside this container and disappears and they couldn't find her. Pippa was missing for, how about this, 7 weeks inside this container. Wow. And I can tell you, Brisbane's hot, but Darwin is brutal.
Gosh.
And this cat went 3,500 kilometres. Shipping container was stored for something like, you know, the journey plus the storage was 7 weeks. And when they opened it up, this cat was still alive. Yes, it was emaciated and had to be brought back to life in a way, but it survived.
Yeah.
Isn't that an amazing story?
It is, actually.
Well, that answers the question for everyone, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Schrodinger's cat He was alive. Thank you, GK.
Yeah, well,
we've been wondering about for centuries.
They do. They have more than one life because I think Pippa's obviously spent hers well and truly on that trip from. You can Google it. Have a look up on Google Maps or something. How far from Darwin is to Brisbane? But it's a short one. I'm going to tell you anyway, Julian, because I know you're keen to know. Rusty, the Australian Terrier.
The other one, yes, I do want to. Rusty, yeah, I do want to know about
Rusty,
that one.
The
yeah.
Australian.
The only thing is, I was hoping that we were going to finish on this nice, heartwarming story, but now you're going to ruin that, aren't you, by telling me?
No, this is actually. No, listen. Listen. Let's get to Rusty, the Australian Terrier, and this one is almost local because I'm not too far from Gundawindi. And if you want to look that up, it's actually Goondawindi, but we locals say Gundawindi or Gundy.
G-double-O, is it?
Yes, G-double-O-N-D-I-W-I-N-D-I, something like that. Uh-huh. Just look for Goondawindi, that'll help you find it. Okay, so Rusty the Australian Terrier, he's visiting in Gundawindi, and this truck decides to stop out the front of the property. So Rusty gets on board and ends up in South Australia, like 1,500 kilometres. And thankfully, he had a little tag, on him. And so they could ring up and say, hey, listen, are you happy to be missing Rusty the Australian Terrier? Because we've got him here in South Australia. So, I mean, Gundawindi's in southwest Queensland. And this truck, obviously, we went, nearly 1,000 miles down into South Australia. But here's the kicker to this story, right? Okay, so we heard about Pippa the cat. She went 3,500 Ks. This fella only went 1,500 Ks. But here's the kicker. It wasn't his first time hitching a ride in a truck. He'd done it before.
Right. Oh, I see. So he loves it. He keeps doing it.
He must enjoy getting rides with, long-distance trucks.
Oh,
because they were saying that he'd done it before. And, of course, it was a shorter journey. But they'd found him a few hundred Ks away sometime earlier. I think he's only a young 3-year-old terrier. So he'll probably do that again. He might hitchhike down to Melbourne or something.
Wow.
Oh, that's lovely. That's quite heartwarming in its own way, actually. I like that story. Yes.
It is. It's a good one. So I'm going to finish on that one, Julie.
Sure. Well, I understand that go on then, Cruzy, yeah.
I just want to ask a question, and I think it's high time that the Australian person clarify this for us. And I'm going to put Chico on the spot now. I've got a theory. I think Australian council members get together, they say, right, blokes, let's have a few beers. And then they have a few beers, and then they say, okay, now we name our town.
Yes.
And that's
just a few beers.
Well, a few beers to Australian, multiply that by 12.
Yeah.
So, GK, for the record, is that how you guys get your funny names?
I've got a feeling, going back in the day, that's probably close to the mark because, we've got Gundawindi, as I've just said. We've got Wagga Wagga. We've got Toowoomba. That's right. You got Toowoomba. To people not from here, that sounds odd, but I sort of live here and I sort of hear it all the time, so it sort of rings okay to me. But we have Banana. We have Orange.
Are you kidding?
Yes, Banana is a place in Queensland, yeah.
That's when they started sobering up.
That's right. Yes, it was the next day, and it was a hangover cure was to eat the banana. So they went, oh, well, okay, let's name this joint, Banana. But, yes, Banana is in Queensland.
I have to say that this is all stretching credulity, GK. I mean, does this not add fuel to the notion that Australia doesn't actually exist? I think you're trying too hard here to prove something.
True. Ooh, yes. That's very true.
Now, that is a very big topic that you and I and others have
absolutely
taken to on Facebook, Julian. Does it exist?
Yes.
Well, if it doesn't, I'm a very, very well-paid actor.
Are you?
Well.
Are you?
Or just the male version of Alexa.
Well, okay. Well, I think I'll leave that one hanging. I probably won't go into it. Before I go, I do want to tell you one thing that probably proves that we are here.
But you mean better than saying, yeah, there's a place called Banana? Do you exist? Yes, there's a place called Banana.
Well, it makes sense to me, Julian.
Okay.
Well, I'm just down the road from Gympie. I mean, people might strain from that strange name, strange to their ears, but I'm just down the road from Gympie. There'd be a lot of places that would be unusual. I want to tell you this. Scientists have just discovered, right? And I'm going to tell you, all of the research facilities and launch pads for launching into space will be moving to the Southern Hemisphere, to South Africa, to Australia, to New Zealand, and to Argentina. And I'll tell you why. It's easier for the rockets to launch from the bottom of the planet, okay, because they don't have to use so much thrust to get into outer space. Okay, so they just drop off the bottom of the planet.
Marvelous.
And away you go. So we are really moving into the space race down here. So, you know, Argentina, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, we're booming. We're going to be heading the space race and leaving the Russians, North Absolutely. Koreans and Chinese well behind.
You're dropping there straight into Cruzy's favorite subject.
Okay.
I wouldn't trust any launch pad in South Africa. If they can hijack a car, trust me, you don't want those guys to be flying the Discovery.
No. Well, unless it's a taxi driver.
Exactly. That's what worries me. It could, anything can happen.
Well, GK, I know you've got to go, so don't want to delay you any further. Thank you ever so much for joining us. It's a delight to have spoken to you again. Mm-hmm. And please do give my regards to NASA, who are clearly paying you to say all these things that you've said today. Thank you ever so much for joining us, GK.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on, Julian. I had a good time. It was a good time to spend a little bit of time with you and my South African comrades. And I will just leave you the one final point. I know I've said this three times already, but who's counting?
Yeah.
Just remember, we Australians invented the boomerang.
what do you call a boomerang that doesn't come back?
A stick.
A stick.
You're on form.
All right. Hooroo, everybody.
Yeah, okay, GK, you will join us, won't you, in an hour or so from now when we have the toast to the new year?
Yes, I will. Thank you. Love to.
Excellent. So speak to you later. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right. Hooroo, everybody.
Hooroo.
Hooroo.
And Andy, I understand that you've also got to drop off fairly soon as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm so sorry about that.
Because you're moving home or something, is that right?
I am. I've actually, for the first time in my life, actually have managed to buy a little flat in Cruzyville. I don't know how to feel about that right now. I'm still trying to process it. But yeah, I'm moving in about 2 weeks, so I've got a lot going on. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you likely to be moving very near to Cruzy, perhaps in the same road or something?
Happily not, but
I'm not sure how to take that.
No, I wouldn't do that to him. But it's close enough. So no doubt I will probably see him a little bit more than I have in the last 3 years, which was twice.
It's going to be a culture shock for you.
A culture shock, but not as much as asking for maggot bags. I think you'll be safe from that one, by the sound of it.
Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Well, thanks ever so much for joining us. You also, I hope, will be able to join us in an hour or so to toast in the new year.
Thanks, Julie. It's been great. And thank you for allowing a woman into this little sanctum. I hope it was not too scary.
No, it's the beginning of great things, and I hope that you'll be a great evangelist for the secret society.
Bye.
Bye.
Cruzy.
And that leaves me.
And are you going to stay with us when we, I think we're going to be talking to Mark Campbell and John McMahon in a few minutes from now. Are you going to be able to stay with us for that conversation?
And I'm definitely going to have the toast with you guys as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think I can do that.
And Frank Johnson.
And Frank.
Yes, yes. And maybe Jeff Bankins as well. Yeah, we'll see. I'm looking here at my Skype and seeing who may be joining us next. I see that we have Mark Campbell joining us on the show. He's coming up through Skype here. I can hear this coming through.
Yep.
And, I've got a message here from Cruzy. Cruzy seems to have dropped out, and he's Skype messaging me. He's flying his helicopter all the way to London now to rescue John McMahon, who's imprisoned in the Tower of London for being rude to the Queen. Right, and that he should be there soon. I wonder what that's all about. Okay, well, we'll get back to Cruzy in a bit and find out the rest of that story. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. Mark Campbell, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me again, Julian. Lovely to be here.
What's that noise in the background?
It's the sound of blades. I'm quite high up at the moment. I'm in a small drone. Looking down, I'm quite close to the ground. I think we're flying over somewhere called WEM. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't heard of WEM, no.
Well, and the next up is Ellesmere is coming up in a few minutes. It's getting quite hilly. Have you heard of that?
Have actually, yes.
Yeah, so that's roughly where I am at the moment.
And so you're actually inside a drone?
Well, the drone has got a sort of compartment on the top that I can see out of. It's a little top heavy, so occasionally it does tilt over a little bit.
And how big is this compartment that you're in?
Well, it's big enough for me.
Yeah.
Not much bigger, I'm afraid. So there's not much noise reduction on it. So hopefully you can hear me okay.
I can just about hear you. I mean, the last time we spoke on New Year's Eve, you were at the bottom of the Mariana Trench. You seemed to get into some amazing places.
I know. That was quite an experience, actually. It took me a while to get back up to the surface, has to be said.
Yeah.
Hopefully this is slightly less dangerous, although still rather claustrophobic, actually.
I'm hoping that you've got my Amazon order, have you?
Yes, there's a box here just tied to the drone. Am I allowed to say what it is?
Collectible spoons of the Third Reich?
Yes, am I allowed to say that?
Yes, go on then.
Collectible spoons of the Third Reich, which is a thing.
Which is a book by James Yannis.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to reading that.
There's also a pair of socks.
Thank you.
That's all right.
Oh, it's great to be speaking to you. And actually, we've got Frank coming in there.
Oh, right.
Frank Johnson, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to speak to you again, Frank. Are you in any strange place? Or are you just normal Frank at the moment?
I actually have been just about ready to leave for an expedition to the Hollow Earth. So I'll be taking that up next month.
Excellent.
Yeah, we're just a few dollars short on the Kickstarter. So,
where is the entrance? It used to be one of the poles, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a couple on each pole. There was some guy who dug up through a drill machine in, I think, the Sahara somewhere, but I'm not sure if that hole is still there. It's quite a while ago.
He dug up through the hole?
Yeah, he went down in the U.S. He dug down in some unique boring machine.
Okay.
And he wound up in the Hollow Earth, and then he had some adventures and came up in the Sahara. So not sure if either of those holes are still open, but the poles are definitely an option. However, they are guarded by the secret Nazi bases and whatnot, so it is a little hazardous to do that, but we're weighing our options.
This chap who did that, does he by any chance sell books?
Yeah.
No, he actually did find a way back down there, and he's kind of chilling and doing his own thing down there. He just doesn't want to even come back up. So
I thought the shape of the Earth these days was like a donut. So how does that work when you're drilling down? You just drill down into part of the donut, I suppose.
I guess so, yeah. That's one of the things we're trying to figure out. Is it hollow? Is it donut? Is it flat? How many turtles are all the way down? I mean, these are the kinds of questions we're trying to answer.
All right.
How many, you know, Nephilim are down there?
And how does Planet X fit into this, Frank?
Well, see, Planet X is the donut hole in some of the more recent theories.
Actually, is the hole or will pass through the hole? I mean, if it passes through the hole, it won't be any problem to anybody, I would have thought.
Right, that's what we're thinking. That's why Planet X, when it came like 5 years ago, nobody noticed. It just slipped right through the hole.
Yeah.
Is there anything relating to jam?
You know, there is rumors, and these are totally unfounded, but there's some rumors that it might be raspberry jam down there.
Okay.
Some fringe groups are saying, you know, blueberry, but I'm not really sure.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I hope so, because I prefer blueberry, actually, I have to say.
Sounds a bit unlikely, blueberry.
Yeah, that is unlikely. Yes, I agree with you.
Well, we're still taking Kickstarter donations till the end of December. So if you want to donate, please get in touch.
Yeah.
No amount is too small. No amount is too large.
I'll put a link on the website, Frank.
How much have you raised so far?
About $5.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're only about, $100,000 short of our goal.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Do you have different stages in this, or is that your top goal there?
Well, it depends, you know. We're planning to go down there and do some investigating, take some photos, and talk to some of the inhabitants and come back up and sell books about it. So
Yeah. I wonder if you'll find any dinosaurs down there.
I think there are dinosaurs down there, yeah. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
And I suppose the Nazi Third Reich spoons will come in useful for the jam.
They will, actually. Yeah, I'll be sure to pick up some souvenirs for you, Julian.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, there's an excellent book here. What does it say about it? Collectible Spoons of the Third Reich is a detailed, heavily illustrated reference book containing relevant historical exposition on many of the personal, organizational, and commemorative spoons of the Third Reich from the period 1933 to 1945. These spoons, unlike most other collectibles from this period, were actually owned and used daily by the people and organizations of those times. The book includes many spoon types, for example, Hitler's personal silverware, Red Cross, SS, the U-47, etc. With over 250 photos, graphics, and over 23,000 words of text, the book extensively explores the relevant historical highlights, which in turn illuminate this unique period in history as reflected by the spoons. So, very much looking forward to that.
Excellent. Yes.
Do take care of it, Mark, as you travel through the sky.
Whoop! No, it's okay.
Oh, good. Oh, dear. My heart jumped.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I just flew a bit too close to one of the crags. Okay.
Dear.
I'm heading towards Skelmersdale. I think I'm flying up now. So
getting close. Yeah. Getting close.
Okay.
I noticed, Frank, you've been a bit remiss on the old Jeff Goldblum same picture every day postings on your Facebook page.
They don't show up in my timeline that much anymore.
No.
No, maybe I have too much other taking up the timeline space, you know.
I've got a film to watch on YouTube. You know, I make a list of things to watch, and there's a film called Mr. Frost, and that's got Jeff Blue, whatever his name is in it.
Bloom Jeff Gold.
Have you heard of that, Frank, Mr. Frost?
I've not heard of Mr. Frost, no. I knew he had like a jazz thing going on, and he had like a cooking show.
From the comments, he's either playing the devil or he's playing some kind of serial killer.
Okay.
Oh.
I think he's playing the devil, actually.
Ooh.
And it's supposed to be really terrible, so I'm kind of looking forward to watching that.
This is so that you can give it a bowler, I suppose.
Well, if it's entertaining, then I might give it a fez. Ah, I've given some terrible film fezzes if I find them entertaining.
For people who are mystified by this, Mark runs a YouTube channel called Bowler and Fez Film Reviews, which I did plug last year. I think you had about 20-odd followers now, and I think you got into the 30s now because of my plug.
I have. 33.
Well done.
And it's stayed at 33 for a very long time. So
you've made it to the Masonic order now.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And I've just passed my 300th review.
Ooh. Well, I do recommend it. If you haven't checked that out, folks, please do. So that's Bowler and Fez Film Reviews there by Mark Campbell. And each one of them is only about 30 seconds long, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 30 seconds long. And basically the gist is I have a bowler and a fez in my hand or wherever. And if I like a drink. If I like a film, I'll put a fez on. If I don't like the film, I'll put a bowler hat on. But I have left my bowler hat on a coach in Mexico last month, so I'll have to purchase another bowler. So I have got at the moment quite a stockpile of them that I'm gradually uploading, but I will need to buy one at some point. Yeah.
How do you reconcile what you've just said there with the fact that you revealed just before we went on air that you didn't in fact go to Mexico and you made it all up?
That was just banter. That was banter. Or was it?
Right. But this isn't banter. You're telling the truth about the bowler then.
I know. I'm telling the truth about the bowler. Mm. I didn't put it on the podcast, did I, that I'd lost my bowler?
You didn't? No.
Perhaps I should have done.
I think you should have done.
Yeah.
Hello? What's that?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I had us on mute. I was just working on some test equipment for the expedition.
Oh, the expedition. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, could you do that in your own time there, Frank?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Anyway, it was about 3:30 in the morning, and I was half dead asleep, so I left it on the luggage rack.
You just think, someone down in Mexico City could be wearing your bowler.
Yeah, and if they happen to look on YouTube and happen to Google my channel, they could start their own channel up.
Wow.
Oh, that would be good.
Well, why not?
Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? Oh, I've come back in again.
I can hear you, yes. Did you hear any of that?
No.
Okay.
Did you not realise that I was gone?
I just thought you were just sitting there quietly.
No, I was completely... Are you there, Frank?
I'm here.
Yeah, he was there. Wow. He was on the receipt listening to the story.
Oh, no, I actually was.
Especially the bit about the goats and the edge of the cliff and the, all that stuff about the rope bridge.
Oh.
Yeah. I almost fell off, actually.
What were you talking about? Lost track now. It was such a long time ago. I must have been out for a couple of minutes.
Does this involve aliens by chance?
You were abducted, weren't you, for 2 minutes?
Oh.
Yes.
Not that I'm aware of, but then generally one isn't aware of these things, I understand.
Well, no. Are you sitting in a room? Is the window closed in your room?
The window is closed.
That doesn't stop them.
Are you wearing your tinfoil hat?
I don't actually have a tinfoil hat.
Well, see, that, yeah, you probably were abducted then.
Can you just rub the back of your neck? And is there anything on the back of your neck at the moment? Any sort of anything hard or metallic feeling in the skin?
Well, there's something hard. I think that it might actually be a vertebra. Let me have a...
Yes,
it, yes, I think it is.
An extra vertebra, no doubt.
Well, I can't count them all quickly.
Okay. Can you count them slowly?
Yes, but it might take a long time. People might get a bit bored. No. Oh, actually, no, there is something metallic here. Oh. it turns out that it's my watch.
Right.
Quite what my watch was doing there, I don't know. But
that's strange.
Oh, okay, well, do you chaps have any strange, weird stories from 2018 that you would care to share with everybody? Don't say no.
Frank, you want to go first?
I didn't really have any. I didn't really have. There were so many weird stories this year. It was so hard to choose because Florida is always interesting, but there's just so many down there. It's almost cheating to use a news story from Florida. So I was trying to. The most interesting one, because it's more recent, was a man with a rather large neck was arrested. He made a lot of internet appearances with jokes and things, but
is that genuine though? I wondered whether that was photoshopped.
No, that's a guy's real neck.
Right.
Yeah.
So is it, Frank? That's what you've come on the show to say.
So what I ended up deciding is I thought the story or the news cycle that has kind of. And it's not one particular incident. It's like the whole situation. And that's the whole dynamic of President Trump. And then like all the people who don't like President Trump just kind of going crazy and crying. And then you have the people on the right who love Trump, even though he's not even necessarily acting in the manner that they would like him to, you know, like he's not necessarily pro-gun and pro-life or whatever, you know. So you have the left who's focusing on, oh, President Trump tweeted something mean and he's literally Hitler and he's doing this and this and this and he's just horrible. We got to impeach him and this and that. And then you have the people on the right who's like, yeah, Trump's making America great again. And everybody's like missing the larger issue in the middle, which is like he's not really for either side. What captivated it mostly, if I had to pick a specific incident, is the whole appointing of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. And I think probably the most strange story I found was actually this kind of conspiracy that he had allegedly had some sort of relations with this woman at a party 30 years ago. And her story kept changing. And then like the people who were supposedly there with her didn't remember going there, didn't see him. So you have like people on the left saying, oh, I believe all women, that she's not lying, she got assaulted and this and that. And then you have the people on the right who's like, yeah, but we got to get this guy in there because he'll, you know, he's going to do the Republican thing for us. And meanwhile, nobody's like really looking at the real issue. Is like he's basically one of the high contributors for the Patriot Act when that came out during Bush's reign. And that basically kind of made a loophole to allow government to have search and seizure or do, you know, wiretapping and different types of intelligence gathering without the proper channels that they used to have. So my whole issue is like the left and right taking sides on Trump. And everybody's missing the larger issue, you know. It's actually a whole other agenda going like a different way, and everybody's focused on, she got assaulted by Brett Kavanaugh. How can you put him there? You have the right who's like, yeah, he's our guy, you know. And it's like nobody's thinking, oh, he approved wiretapping. Great, you know. So
right, in a sense, it's the continuation of this sort of right and left polarization that's going on, but it seems to be ramped up in extreme ways at the moment. But it really is the same old thing carrying on, as you say, with the real power just churning away in the background, and people are being distracted from the things that really matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I do have a strange story here, and I don't really know what to make of it. Now, Mark knows about this one. This is a woman who claims that she's become engaged to a chandelier. And so this is a lady who, well, claims to be called Amanda Liberty, 34 years old at the moment. She identifies as objectum sexual. So that means that she feels attraction to objects rather than people. I must admit, I've not actually come across that term before. Any of you come across that term?
No.
I've not heard the term, but I guess I've heard of people having something like that. I actually had a coworker where I work. Now he's gone now, but he seemed to have some sort of steamy affair with a mop that had been sitting by. It is real. I can tell you that it is a real thing.
It's a thing.
Oh, I can understand that. A mop, yeah. Now you're talking. Right.
Well, I've seen people dance with mops quite a lot.
The bucket was also by his desk, so I don't know where the bucket
is. I used to get the magazine 14 times for a bit.
Uh-huh.
And there was a feature there of people would take... Sorry.
This is going to be good, I can tell, Mark.
People who take photographs of mops that would be sort of standing at an angle, unsupported, in various different places in the world. So they would just be sort of slightly leaning, and there would be no explanation for how they were done.
So this is a kind of supernatural thing, is it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like electrical hotspots or something.
I thought you meant they were sort of posing at angles in a sexual sense.
No, I wasn't going there. No. Right. That's another subscription, I took.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Jeff. Oh, I'm so glad you're on the show, Jeff.
That was the best decision you made, inviting Jeff Gold.
Oh, dear. Well, apparently this lady this year has now got a tattoo of this particular chandelier to whom she is engaged. But the story appeared, I want to say, for the first time last year, but I'm not sure that's true. I think it probably appeared years before. But last year, she made the decision to get engaged to this chandelier. So this is a lady from Leeds. This is a story here from The Sun from 2017 that she plans to marry a chandelier that she bought online. And she says that she's hooked on kisses and cuddles with this antique. She was 33 at the time, and this chandelier at the time was 90 years old. And she's decided that it's called Lumiere. To be honest, I don't actually know what to make of this lady, whether she's crazy or whether she's just attention-seeking, wants her 15 minutes of fame, as Andy Warhol, as everybody knows, said that everybody will one day have their 15 minutes of fame, or I don't know what's going on with her at all, but this story seems to pop up, and I think it's probably popped up before, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, I did a little digging into the... Oh, just a very quick looking online, and it seems she, back in 2012... there's a little snippet of a program called This Morning, isn't it, in the UK?
Yes.
TV chat show, and she's on there, and this is where she's fallen in love with the Statue of Liberty back then. Obviously moved on now.
I wonder, has she considered the age gap between her and the chandelier?
She has.
Yeah, they mentioned
it. Seems like it's robbing the cradle to me.
No, it says here in the story of The Sun, it says that she isn't fazed by the whopping 57-year age gap between her and the tarnished light fitting.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So no, she's not bothered by that. And apparently the other chandeliers with whom she has a relationship are not bothered either. This is one of the things that makes me wonder whether she is just courting attention here, I mean, and nothing else, because she claims that she's in an open relationship with these chandeliers and they're not bothered. How can you claim to speak for a chandelier?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, she might not be worried about the age gap, but what about the chandelier? Yeah. It does say, I don't know if you've read further on, it says her first relationship was with a drum kit. she was 14.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it is the same woman who fell in love with the Statue of Liberty as well. So I wonder if she'll pop up in a few years' time, falling in with love with something else.
Yes, maybe. Yes, here it is. Amanda said, quote, "None of my chandeliers are jealous of each other. they understand that I love them all for all of their different personalities.
Yeah.
So it could carry on for years, couldn't it?
Well, I suppose they're just glad of the attention.
Reputable organisations like the Sun and the Mirror.
Probably the Daily Mirror, I expect.
That sort of thing, yes, anyway. Yeah. They can go on selling this story, yeah. Anyway, it amused me.
Yeah.
Mark, do you have any stories?
It's kind of similar in the sense of somebody using the media just to big themselves up, if you like. Or a guy called Emile Ratelband, I don't know if I'm saying that right, this Dutch guy, and the story was that he's 69, but he wanted to change his age to 49 through the courts. They wanted the court to legally change his age, because he went on Tinder, the dating site, and he said that when he put his age down as 69, nobody was interested. But because he's got such a youthful face that if you put it 49, people would be interested. I mean, there's so much you could say about that. Essentially, he is a motivational speaker, and he's got his own website. And I was just looking at it just now, and it says he uses NLP to help people, neuro-linguistic programming. And he's got, this bit is amusing, firewalking and entertainment is a subheading of one of the things he does. Now, the amusing part is that entertainment, the word entertainment is written, entert, and then an R for registered trademark, ainment.
Right.
Doesn't say what it is. Okay. It just says firewalking is the metaphor to make you feel and see that you can do more than you ever thought. Enter, registered trademark, ainment.
Uh-huh.
Emile entertains and trains. Emile, I don't. It's basically gibberish, as far as I can see. Really,
right. So he's obviously professionally involved in entertainment, and he has made a big advert for himself by doing this.
That's, yeah, I mean, he doesn't look 69, but obviously when you go onto any kind of dating site or anything on the internet, you just say what you want. You don't have to put the truth down about how old you are or anything. So clearly it's all a big thing just to get his face on the news. And surprise, surprise, the court said, no, we're not going to allow that.
When I saw it, it was reported as he was identifying as a 49-year-old or whatever it was.
Yeah,
and I wondered whether there was a sort of, whether he was making a political comment there about the, you know, the craziness of extreme identifying as kind of mentality these days, you know.
I don't know. I mean, possibly. It's a buzzword, isn't it? I don't think he's said anything, I think, about it. Otherwise, yeah, you could say that as being kind of an interesting statement, but I think he's just done it to promote himself in a clever way.
A bit disappointing. I was wondering if it was kind of performance art, you know, making a political point, but oh well. Yeah, you're probably
I imagine what would happen if legally you could change your age.
Oh, yes, indeed. It would be astonishingly crazy.
Why not?
Yeah.
Or perhaps you could legally challenge it and say, well, I want to change my age to a year on another planet that takes much longer to rotate around the Earth.
Well, yeah, I mean, personal identification trumps all facts, not just biological facts, but physical facts about the universe, then why not? Exactly, yeah.
Exactly. I want my age to be in Saturnian years, so I'm 2 years old or 3 years old, whatever.
Yeah. Hey, you've got something there, Mark.
Thank you.
Bring up the Sun or the Mirror now.
Yes, as long as I use the word identify as, they'll like it.
You know what? That gives me an idea. I am going to get in touch with them and tell them I identify as He-Man and see where that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you got some kind of costume or something to show that you're vaguely committed to the idea?
No.
Okay.
Well, you've got a Spider-Man hoodie there, Frank.
Why don't I do that? Yeah, I got a Spider-Man costume. I actually have the costume.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to identify as Spider-Man.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Ah, but you might come into copyright problems there.
But my identity trumps all facts and legality, so...
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Are you wearing that at the moment?
Yes, actually.
Yes, you are.
Well, I'm actually hanging upside down from the ceiling.
Why don't you identify as the character that Stan Lee was apparently working on just before he died? You heard that?
I didn't know that there was one.
He was working on a character called Dirt Man.
Okay.
Apparently.
I think you should do that, Frank.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There's not much to go on, but...
I'll give you the address of the Daily Express.
You have some dirt near where you live.
There's dirt in my yard, yes.
Okay, well, there we go.
I thought you lived in California, Frank.
Sometimes, yes. Okay. Most of the time I'm in, New York City. because I identify as Spider-Man. So.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see. Yeah. Yes, of course.
I only get out to California when, you know, say like Dr. Octopus or the Lizard comes out this way.
Uh huh.
And then I have to track him down and, you know, always, knock some sense into him, bring him back to New York.
Presumably, you always end up at the Golden Gate Bridge, do you?
You know, it seems that there are a lot of superhero battles and things there.
Yeah.
You know, it got ruined in X-Men 3. It was in the planet, one of the Planet of the Apes movies, one of the newer ones.
Yeah. Well, it goes right back to one of my first films I watched was Superman, the original Superman with Christopher Reeve in 1978. Hmm. And that ends up with a brilliant scene on the Golden Gate Bridge, yeah.
I wonder why that is. Maybe it's just because it's like the only recognizable landmark out here? Or
I don't know. I don't know.
You know what? You want to know a weird trivia. So,
yes, please.
The Golden Gate Bridge, I found this out like maybe about 10 years ago. My wife and I came out to a small town called Lodi because she had to go there for work. And we flew into San Francisco and just stayed an extra night to do some sightseeing. And so the next day we rented a couple of bicycles in downtown San Francisco, and we rode our bikes from there to the John Muir Woods, which is this like redwood forest, and about 17 miles, and I don't recommend the bike ride. Anyway, the John Muir Woods is the actual, and being that it's not far from the Golden Gate, I thought this was relevant. So the John Muir Woods is the actual original meeting place of the Bohemian Grove.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they have a sign there that even advertises that. So it was I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't know who is it? What is it?
Oh, you need to listen to my interview with Peter Phillips, Dr. Peter Phillips. You'll find out all about it. He did his PhD on it, believe it or not.
I have the podcast here, so I don't know. No, I just missed that one. Okay.
Yeah, that was a while back, actually.
Okay. I thought you were going to mention Frank about it being where Vertigo was filmed.
I've seen Vertigo once, and I didn't remember that, actually.
Yeah, there's a sort of scene in the Redwood Forest. Yeah,
that's a good movie, though.
Oh, it's excellent, yeah.
Well, this brings up the fact that we, between us, have agreed that we're going to do some film review podcasts, aren't we, in the future? Oh. We can actually agree on a film that we think is worth doing, because I know that both you, Mark, and Frank have radically different views on what's good and bad, so we might end up as a squabble, but I like the idea in principle, so we could choose something at some point and go into it in some depth. It'd be quite good.
What are you talking about?
Actually, I don't know. I don't know. I've forgotten what I was talking about myself now. Go on, Frank. You agreed to it on Facebook.
I did agree to it, yes.
Well, to be honest, I think we should choose films where we do disagree. Otherwise, it would be a kind of boring.
It's true.
Oh, I like that. Yes, so do I. So do
yeah,
I.
That's
I think
true.
Discussion will come out of us disagreeing, really.
Mm-hmm. And I think we should make it clear that the podcast just wouldn't be each of us putting a hat on. There will be some discussion, wouldn't there?
Oh, well.
I was going to say, could I do sombreros and berets?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Well, spoilers, but one of my Bowler of Fezzes, which I've done in Paris, might well contain a beret.
Ooh.
Mm. You're shaking things up. I don't think we can handle bowler, fez, and beret. That's just.
I'm about to shake them up as I created it.
Frank, you spoke.
I was just saying, as a viewer and subscriber of your channel, I don't know that I can handle a third hat. This is just.
No, there's only two. It's subsequent to my losing my bowler. I just used a beret briefly.
Oh, okay. It's only substitutionary for a brief period. I think I can. Okay.
It's like the George Lazenby of the Bowler of Fez world.
So you're still going to remain binary on
your review? Absolutely. I identify with binary, yeah.
Okay.
But you don't identify with George Lazenby, obviously.
Ah, controversially, I think it's probably the best James Bond film.
Ah, do you know, I agree. I really like that.
I think it's brilliant. And it could well be that because they all knew that at the heart of it there is this guy who's not very good, they go all out to make a really, really excellent professional. It's just something about it. It's got a certain atmosphere about it.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. I mean, is he okay? He's okay.
I think he's okay as well, yeah.
Yeah, he's okay. I think the film itself is exceptionally good.
Do you know, there's one moment in it that I absolutely love. He sort of jumps onto the ground and it's icy and he's got this machine gun. And he skids along, shooting this machine gun, and just at that moment they play dun 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 dun. Absolutely classic moment.
I know, it's got some great chases in it. It's an excellent film.
Yeah, you hate it, don't you, Frank?
On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah. Yes.
I've never actually seen that one.
Oh.
So in the 90s, when I started watching James Bond movies, I watched a couple of the Connery ones or like scenes from those, and I watched a couple of the Roger Moore ones. And of course, all that we had for Pierce Brosnan at that time was like GoldenEye and maybe Tomorrow Never Dies. You know, I had watched the Timothy Dalton ones. Yeah. So at that point, I'm like, why do I want to waste my time with this guy who's in one Bond film? It's like, I had a friend who had seen it too, and he's like, well, he gets married in the movie. I'm like, what the hell? But, since you guys said it's actually good, I would be interested because, you know, as I've gotten older and I've actually read a few of the James Bond novels, I found that like almost none of the movies measure up to the, from what I've seen, they almost all feel like they're parodies of the novels and to a certain extent, you know, because they have goofy moments in them. That's enjoyable. But when I read the first two Bond novels and The Man with the Golden Gun, I'm like, this is totally a different tone than any other movies.
Have you read the books, Julian? Any of the books?
I have read none of them whatsoever, no.
Oh, well, I recommend, because to start with Dr. No or Casino Royale, because the books are, as Frank says, they're totally serious, totally believable. And what I love about them is they're all from James Bond's point of view, so they all follow him. They're not in first person, but nothing happens without Bond being there, if you see what I mean. So,
you know what my favorite book was so far is The Spy Who Loved Me.
Oh, that's a weird one. Really strange one.
Half of the book was like set up, but it was just so interesting, all the intrigue going on. It was just like, what the heck, dude? This is just going to blow up.
Well, that is such a weird book because you know the film, Julian, don't you? With the submarines inside the oil tanker and everything.
Let me think.
Roger.
Yeah, I know that one. I really loved that one when I was a child, yeah.
It's really over the top. The book is written from a female point of view.
Oh.
So it's a female character who, it's the only James Bond, I think, written from I did this, I did that, from a female.
Okay.
Who's just staying in a motel, isn't that right, I think? And she gets involved with some baddies in a motel in America.
Mm. Something like that.
Yeah. Absolutely nothing to, they just took the title and there's no points of similarity at all between the two. I wouldn't suggest it is the good place to start, to be honest, because it's a weird, unlike any of the others. But read Dr. No, see what you think, because it's superb.
I haven't read Dr. No yet, but I read Casino Royale and Live and Let Die.
Right, yeah.
I think Casino Royale is the first one. The Man with the Golden Gun was good, too.
Hmm. Well, they make everything seem very realistic, and also the boringness of his job. They emphasize that a lot, about domestic goes into London and does this and goes to his flat and... Whereas the films don't really touch on that at all. So they are quite different beasts.
Mm.
Now, Julian, you like the last one, whatever that was, Spectre. You liked that, didn't you? Because
I quite like that one, yes.
I gave that a boulder.
Yes.
Halfway through, I was enjoying it, and then suddenly it just seemed to just go nowhere and stayed going nowhere till the end. So,
Well, you know, this is going really well. It sounds like we will actually be able to do some really good film reviews.
Absolutely.
Perhaps we should even do a Bond film, perhaps.
Well, why not?
How about the first one with David Niven? Should we do that?
No. That's not a Bond film.
Yes, it is.
It's an unofficial. It's terrible.
I agree with that. Yeah, Frank, you up for that one? No.
No.
I mean, it is awful.
It is. It's bad. Even though it's got Peter Sellers in, it's bad.
It's like this is what the 60s at its worst was like, I think. And I think it had, I don't know, it's got about four or five directors. Mm. I think the problem is it's just a complete mess. If it had a consistency of style, you could appreciate it, but it's just a complete mess.
Should we do... Is it For Your Eyes Only? Is that the one that starts off with the guy in the wheelchair, the electric wheelchair?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that introduction.
Blofeld, it's Blofeld.
Blofeld, that's right. It's a fantastic introduction. I think that's my favourite film. Not my favourite film, my favourite Bond film, just because of that introduction. I think it's excellent.
Okay.
Who's in that one?
Roger Moore.
Yeah.
And what was interesting in that is that it came after Moonraker, because Moonraker that was felt, well, they couldn't go anywhere else. That was the most absurd Bond ever, going out into space.
Breathing in space.
Yeah, and they deliberately came right back to the books, actually. And I think that's a collection of two or three short stories put together into the film. So those different strands in the film have actually come from his books.
Oh, wow.
It's not my favourite or anything, but I think it's a good attempt to try to take it back down to Earth again, literally.
So that introduction there with Bond flying that helicopter and picking Blofeld up, that's all actually in the book, is it?
Not that, no.
Right.
The characters, so there's a woman character who's trying to get her revenge on someone else. The character played by the guy from Fiddler on the Roof, he keeps eating nuts, he's a character from another... They kind of put
Topol,
the characters...
Topol, is it?
Topol, yeah. So no, the beginning of it isn't, no.
And that was, of course, all filmed in the Docklands, and I think they've completely rebuilt all over there, sadly. Very good. It's an excellent pre-credit sequence, yeah.
It is. What concerns me about it is that's the bit I like that isn't in the books. But you're persuading me to read the books. I'll have a go. I'll start with Dr. No.
Well, that's read them in a... Don't have any sense that they're anything to do with the films. Just read them, if you can, as a completely different beast.
Okay, well, I'll do that, yes. Now, Mark...
Hello.
You have a joke that you were going to share with us. I'm wondering whether this will be a good time to share it.
Okay.
And of course, this joke is in binary, and this is the only joke in binary that I've ever heard. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, you ready? You ready, Frank?
I'm ready.
Okay. 01011 001 1001 Did I tell you the punchline?
I thought that was the punchline.
Oh, that wasn't the punchline.
Jeff Goldblum thought it was funny. I thought it was funny.
He did. Can we tell you the punchline? You probably guessed it.
Go on then. What's the punchline?
Ready? Okay. 001 1001
Oh, that was really weird. I'm sure I heard GK laugh then. How did GK get back in? I mean, he's not even with us now.
He's actually here helping me set up for the expedition.
I see.
He's really busy right now. That's why he won't join in. But
At least that clears that one up.
Is the money mainly going on rope, Frank, to lower yourself down through the hole? Is that where the money is?
That's one of the many things we're collecting, yes.
Okay. So essentially you want money for old rope?
New rope, if possible.
Okay.
But, you know, old rope is more economical, but there's a safety concern there, so...
Okay, Frank, this is something that you might want to think about when you go into the Earth. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's assume, for the sake of argument, that the Earth is round. I mean, I appreciate not, but let's just, for the sake of argument, if you had a hole going down into the center of the Earth and out the other side, if you fell down that hole at the center of the Earth, would you then go... You'd start falling through... the other side, and then you come back to the middle, and would you stay in the middle? Would it be a zone of non-gravity right in the middle? Ooh. Or would you go falling out and through the other side?
Well, here's what the rumor is.
Yeah.
You would actually fall down into the sun that's in the middle of the Earth.
Yes.
And you'd be incinerated.
Okay, that would make sense.
Yeah, so there's no worry about falling through to the other side. You won't make it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what if you were able to put some sort of insulating tube all the way through?
I haven't thought about that. It'd have to be really insulated.
Mm. It would have to be quite thick, Julian, wouldn't it?
Mind you, you posted a story about this, didn't you, Frank? I think it was you, about the Chinese who had dug a hole all the way through to, was it to the United States?
Yeah, they did, actually. It was the Weekly World News, a very reliable news source here in the States. It used to be available at every grocery store checkout lane, but with the digital age, they just kind of went online. You'd go stand in the checkout, and there'd be these Weekly World Newses, and they'd always have these very sensational stories, like Bigfoot kept me as a love slave for 15 years, or Russian soldiers.
So did you say these were unreliable stories, Frank?
No, they're totally reliable.
Okay.
Absolutely, 100% true.
Right.
But yeah, no, they stopped doing print ones, and now they're online.
Mm. That makes them more reliable, yeah?
Because if it's on the web, it's true.
Right. So but the point I was driving towards...
No, hang on. I just thought of something, Julian. Sorry. I think what Frank is referring to... what you're referring to, you're making it out of something that's insulated.
Yes.
Yeah, this tube. Mm. If you made it out of whatever the Apollo rockets... they sent to the moon, you made it out of that, it'll be fine, because they managed to insulate the astronauts from the intense heat and radiation of the Van Allen belt. Ooh. And that was only a few millimetres of tin, so just do that.
That's if they did it, of course.
Well, implying they didn't, yes.
Mm.
Well, I actually have news about that, too.
What?
Well, from the same source.
I know the facts. I actually downloaded these... secret files. I hope you're recording this, Julian.
Yes, I am.
So it has come.
I want to be able to say you heard it here first.
Yeah, you probably haven't heard it here first, but this is probably going to be first for a lot of people. So remember, though, you should probably buy my book about this, too, to get all of the details, of course.
Yeah.
But Stanley Kubrick, there's files that I found that show Stanley Kubrick did direct and fake the moon landing.
Mm.
However, you know how strict he was about his quality control and all the detail. Mm. Mm. So he actually demanded that they film it on location on the moon. So they were faked on the moon. It's exactly true.
Can you send me those files?
Yes. Can you put them in the show notes?
Yes, I will do. Definitely.
Which, wait, a friend of mine said he read a book saying that Stanley Kubrick didn't exist.
Well, did your friend exist?
Oh, I might have dreamt him, actually. Could have been a dream, actually. Forget that. Could have been a dream.
We're in layers and layers.
This could be a dream. I mean, I could be asleep now.
Yeah.
I mean, along with your audience.
No, I'll edit it to make sure it works. Don't worry.
Okay.
Oh, dear. One reference I wanted to get in, but I didn't, is Frank, with all your exploits as Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Did you manage to fight off Putin's weaponized squid?
Oh, I didn't know anything about that, actually.
You didn't know that one?
No.
Is this like Day of the Dolphin? Where George C. Scott trains a dolphin to kill the president?
I can only wish that were a real film.
Is that a real
It is. Day of the Dolphin. You must have
seen it. We've reached such a tone now, there's no way I can believe you.
The catch line of the film is this. You ready?
Uh-huh.
Go on.
Unwittingly, he trained a dolphin to kill the president of the United States.
Unwittingly.
I've seen it. It's on telly.
This is right in that vein of like Sharknado. It's so stupid. I can't believe it.
It's true. Like,
right. We're going to review that one.
Yeah.
Day of Dolphin. I guess it's real. American science fiction thriller film.
Got George C. Scott in. I mean,
George C. Scott.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, if it's real, Frank, you'll put a captured image from it on your Facebook page, won't you?
I will have to rise to that challenge, yes.
Where are you up to now with your profile images? You got to 600 when we last talked about it. It must be over 1,000 by now.
I've kind of tapered back quite a bit, not changing as much. I'll check that if you guys want to look at something else quick.
Okay.
Profile pictures, 1,039. Now, some of them are duplicates. Yeah. Like, I have 3 of Mark Twain, but that's because I've edited the picture a couple of times. But we could easily claim 1,000.
Congratulations.
Thank you, yes.
Well, thanks ever so much, both of you, for coming on and sharing your reactions to 2018.
Whoa, sorry.
You all right?
You okay there, Mark?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. It was just dipping down a bit, and I just was slightly worried about the package underneath there, but it's okay. Your book is safe.
Oh, that's a great relief.
Yeah. Not about the socks. I'm not sure if the socks are still there. They might have... No, they've actually dropped off. Sorry.
So will you be... I know you've got to do a bit more of your journey, and Frank, I know you've got to leave us for a while, but will you both be able to come back at the end to join in with a toast to the new year?
Should be.
Yeah, I think I'm game. I'm going to go inventory the hamsters for the expedition, so... I'll be back shortly. Yep. Just wave me down and I'll come join you in the toast.
Excellent. And are you going to deliver things, Mark, in the meantime?
Once I've dropped your package off, I'll go back to Amazon and get the next one. Yeah, yeah. It's quite a long night for me, so think of me doing that.
Yes, but be careful not to bump into Cruzy, because he's still in his helicopter somewhere around the London area.
Right. Well, hopefully, yeah. Cross fingers. And also, I'm getting very hungry, but... There's nowhere to eat at the moment here, so
no.
Canteen at Amazon is very small. There's enough for 2 people.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, I'll speak to you both later, and thanks for coming on. Good to speak to you both, and hopefully at some point we'll organise to speak about a film, maybe even a James Bond film. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. Yeah. Sounds great.
Okay, speak to you both later then.
Okay. Bye, Julian.
Bye-bye.
Be seeing you.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, I can see that I've got Cruzy coming back online here. Cruzy, are you still in the helicopter? Have you got to London yet?
Yes, Julian. I had to make a slight detour to pick up Jeff Bankins in America. And we are almost in London. I'm dodging air traffic here a bit, but we'll be there shortly.
Excellent. Did you spot Mark Campbell in his Amazon drone, by the way, while you were en route?
I've got no idea. I was in stealth mode. As you can hear, my helicopter's very quiet today.
Yeah.
So I can't really see much, and I don't think they can see me.
At least I
hope not. I'm sneaking up on London.
Excellent. Jeff, how are you doing? Are you good at traveling in a helicopter? Do you feel okay?
Julian, you know, this is the first time I've been in a helicopter, but I have to say, Cruzy's quite a pilot, and it feels like I've been riding a bicycle all the way over to London, but, you know, much faster.
And have you got your strongman skills with you today? Because, of course, you're going to rescue Johnny McMahon from the Tower of London.
Well, before we got to London, I hung outside the helicopter for a bit to do a little stretch before we got there, and I'm warmed up and ready.
Right. Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. Good. So I'm waiting here for you to land on top of the Tower of London, Cruzy. Are you going to be able to do that? You had some difficulty landing. I think you did a simulation at one point, and you couldn't land the aircraft. Is that right?
Yeah, but it's only simulation. I eventually get it right. And, we have landed now. I think Excellent. We are safe. If anything is bent out of place, I think Jeff can fix it for us.
Yeah, no problem.
Wonderful. Okay, Jeff, can you see the bars of the Tower of London where John McMahon and his cat are incarcerated?
Yeah, I see that cat, and I think it's standing on top of Johnny's head. So I'm fixing to jump down there and try to bend the bars open for him.
Okay. Do you think we need some sort of superhero music while you do that? I think that might be a good idea.
Yeah, I think so. That would be perfect.
Okay. Flight of the Bumblebee.
Okay, well, go ahead then. If you can bend those bars on air, I think we will all be impressed.
All right, well, just like I normally do, let's do a 3-2-1 count. Ready? 3, yep. 2, 1.
Go.
All right, here's Johnny's cat. Catch, Cruzy.
Got him. Ow. He scratches. Calm down, dude.
Chili the cat, nice to see you. Johnny, are you in
Johnny.
There?
Here's Johnny.
I'm afraid to jump out. There's big gorilla bent the bars. He's scaring me.
I'm not catching him.
Okay. All right, I'll piggyback him up to the helicopter. Jump on my back, Johnny.
Don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Cruzy, for rescuing me from the Tower of London. The Queen has imprisoned me there. She didn't like the verse in my Queen song. It goes like, she taxes me to death. I can't afford me dope. I'd like to get a high. Let it be a laugh. She didn't like that, so she put me in the Tower of London.
Well, I think rightly so, actually. You need to be very careful because she might hear you again. You're still in London, aren't you?
It's apparently.
Hey, do we need to put you back in there, Johnny? Are you going to behave?
Yeah. Apparently, it's offensive.
I'm getting a text message from her now. She's not impressed.
No, apparently getting the Queen high is inappropriate.
I should think so.
It might open her eyes, loosen her up a bit. You know, lighten up and live, Queen. Oh, yeah!
Are you chaps all actually in the helicopter now? Are you on top of the Tower of London? I need to get the image in my mind.
Jeff has given me some sick pills, so I'm able to endure this ride. I'm getting dizzy. I'm getting dizzy, Julian. My Moggy is being upset. Oh, Moggy. Oh, my Moggy. Cruzy, land this thing, please. Oh, yeah.
Are we going to go to the depths of the Lancashire countryside in stealth mode first?
I think that would be a good idea. If you can all hop inside, then we can go to, I think, Jeff, you've got a couple of stories to share with us, or one story to share with us, have you, from 2018? Because that's what we've been doing for the rest of the show. Have you got anything?
Sure. I have one disturbing story and one strange story, if that's okay.
Yeah, great, yeah.
Would you like disturbing first?
Ooh, perhaps that would be a good idea, yeah. So then we can have the relief at the end.
Okay, there's a man in the south of the United States, I think in Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken. He announced to his father, and they're both grown men, of course. He announced to his father that he had fallen romantically in love with his car, and he had been having an affair for quite a while.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure if they found a minister that would marry them, but he did announce to his father that he was in love with his car, and as his father came to talk to him about it.
Is he a Queen fan by any chance?
I would imagine he's a fan of all kind of strange things.
Sounds like.
Well, it's funny enough you should say that, because earlier on in the evening we were discussing the very same issue with regard to that woman who's engaged to a chandelier. So it's the same kind of thing. Most
it's exactly the same, yes. Very bizarre. Yeah. And he named his car too. Uh-huh. To be honest, it was an old, ugly model. I'm not sure what he found so fun about it, but anyway, it was very strange.
So you could understand it more, could you, Jeff, if it was a more attractive model?
No, but it might make me feel a little better. All right, then I've got another unusual story from just down the road from where I live.
Uh-huh.
I'm in Louisiana, but I'm real close to the Texas border, and Houston, Texas is the largest city over there, and it's only like 2.5 hours from here. This is from United Press International. earlier this week. Houston drivers dodge runaway spool for fourth time. A giant spool got loose on a busy Houston road. And by the way, this is not a thimble-sized spool for thread. This is a spool that's used for a large wire and cable. Anyway, it got loose on a busy Houston road for the fourth time since October, forcing drivers to think fast to get out of its path. The spool collided with a blue truck, but the family inside the truck did not appear to be injured. The incident occurred just 1 week after an even larger spool came loose in traffic on the South Loop. Two spools got loose on Interstate 10 near Wayside November 12th, and the first spool rolled free in the same area on October 25th. So, for some
what is it about that area? That is bizarre.
I don't know. But apparently they have spools that come loose off of big trucks. They get to play dodge the traffic.
Mm. Yes. I don't know. These spools are giant. I mean, they're like maybe 6-8 feet tall. They can weigh like 2 or 3 tons. I mean, this
Oh, they're huge, yeah. They got to be picked up with forklifts or fart trucks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, these things, if they hit you, like, if you were in Oregon, you know, next to the volcano, we got a lot of really steep hills. That thing would absolutely wipe you out if it was on some of these roads here. I mean,
that's what I'm thinking. Houston, in our area, is swampland, so yeah. There's no hills to speak of. I don't know how these things got loose and rolled.
It doesn't take much of an incline, you know. All you need is, like, a couple degrees. It'll get going pretty good. But in Oregon, that thing would be moving like 40, 50 miles an hour. And then that thing, it would be all over. It would take out like a whole traffic jam worth of cars and trucks.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. I like that story.
And I like how it ends without much closure because it keeps me wondering what's going to happen next. But it doesn't tell me. So.
Yes, I've been on the freeway next to those, you know, those big flatbed trucks with chicken cages stacked on.
Oh, yeah.
And in Oregon, it's cold, you know, in the winter. I mean, it's 20 degrees. I was driving down the freeway, and I saw one of these chicken trucks, and the wind was blowing through their feathers, and they were shaking and shivering. And it made me cry. It really hurt my feelings.
I'm glad you're not a chicken, huh?
Yeah. Well, we had a chicken truck like that wrecked, and all the chickens fell off, and the cages broke, and all the chickens came loose. And so these guys, you know, from the Foster Farms chicken rescue crew came, and they were wearing all these, you know, high visibility vests and hard hats and stuff. And it was a crew that grabbed the chickens and put them back in their cages and get them back on the truck. But these chicken activists showed up. And, you know, I live on the West Coast. So there's an activist for everything. So this team of chicken activists showed up and started grabbing the chickens and taking them to their trucks. And there was this big fight, and they called the police. And they told the chicken activists to back off and go away. So they climbed up on top of the hill and got back in their trucks. But one of them had a high-vis vest and a hard hat in their trunk. So they put the high-vis vest and the hard hat on, and they looked just like the chicken rescue crew. So she went down, and she started grabbing chickens, you know, and bringing them back to her truck to save their lives. And the cops, finally, somebody noticed that she wasn't really part of the chicken rescue crew, and so they arrested her for stealing chickens.
Was she an egg napper? Is that what she was called?
Yeah, you call it chicken napper. Chicken napper. But the best part of the story is that the next day, the chicken activists had come in. You know how people, like, when there's a wreck, they put this big cross there and all these flowers and everything? You know,
yeah.
to mark the place where the person died. Well, these chicken activists came in the middle of the night, like probably 2, 3 in the morning, and they put up all these little chicken crosses and flowers to mark the chickens that had died.
Wow, say,
that's intense.
I have to say, I've never heard of a chicken activist. That is first for me.
It's a true story. True story. It just happened here about 3 months ago.
My grandmother was just telling me last night how they would cook chicken at home when she was a little girl. She's in her 80s. They would buy the whole chicken, still alive, still feathers and everything, take it home, wring its neck, and butcher it.
Yeah.
We still do that here in Oregon, believe it or not, especially the Asian community. I work with a lot of Chinese and Vietnamese and Cambodian people, and that's how they eat chicken.
Yeah. In the back of my mind, I have a story from my family where I think my grandfather killed a chicken that they had for a long time. And my father and his brothers came to treat this chicken as a bit of a pet, really. But then the day came when it had to be dealt with, and I think they were rather upset. But those were the days, and that's what life was like.
Yeah. And incidentally, my wife's grandmother would tell her and her sister when they were kids, stay out of the yard when a chicken's butchered, because when they cut its head off, it'll run up your skirt.
Ooh, yes. Crumbs.
It will.
Crumbs.
It will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you heard that story about, is it Mike the Headless Chicken? It's supposed to have lived for a very long time after its head going.
Yes.
I saw a statue of that chicken at a Ripley's Believe It or Not museum somewhere in the U.S.
It's genuine, is it?
Yeah, it's
story. Supposed to be, yeah.
Yeah, he had that chicken alive. He took it around the country, displaying it and showing people. And he would put
it's so strange.
It is so strange.
He lost his head and his brains, and now he's working in Parliament.
Well, he'll be there forever.
Be candidate for the U.S. president, wouldn't he?
Oh, shoot.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I think you should have said sorry, not sorry, because that's what it sounds like.
That's one of the qualifications for being out of state, isn't it? Oh, dear.
Yeah, and having no head, right?
I thought that was really interesting. I read all about it. He would put little seeds and pieces of corn down the chicken's neck.
Like, I saw that. That's so strange.
That's gross.
Oh, it is. It's really gross. You should see the pictures and the videos.
Well, I've got as you brought up animals, I've got some animal stories here. They're not local. I mean, this one is from India. From the BBC News, they reported it as rats blamed for shredded banknotes inside Indian ATM. And there were some technicians who arrived to fix this malfunctioning cash machine. And they found inside that 1.2 million rupees had been shredded. And it looks like it was shredded by rats that had got inside the machine. And that's equivalent to $17,600 of notes that have been eaten by these rats. I know it's horrible, but I couldn't help but laugh at it.
That's incredible. They probably were in that place where the rats, they let them live because they think they are their grandpas and their uncles and aunts that died. Ever seen that temple there where they got just like a million rats and they just crawl all over everybody?
Oh, that's so gross. I've seen that.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
I love rats. I had a pet rat when I was a kid. I just loved him. He was like a spotted cow, black and white.
He was a cow, did you say?
He was like a spotted cow, you know, like a black and white spotted cow.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. That was
I bet your cat likes him more than you did.
Yeah, the cat finally got him. I had a rat chew part of my ear off. I'm still missing part of my ear. I woke up at night, and there it was, chewing on my ear.
You are kidding.
No, seriously. It was a huge rat, like the size of a small cat.
What I don't understand is how you could have slept for long enough for it to have done any serious damage.
Ah, drugs. Drugs.
Well, if they were involved, did you even really have a rat there, or was it a figment of your imagination?
Oh, no, it was a real rat. I grabbed it.
What color was it, Johnny? How big?
It was like a gray river rat. Like a big gray river rat. And I picked it up and brought it to my mom and showed her my ear. She's like, oh, my God, you're missing part of your ear. I go, yeah, I want to put it in a cage, so I want to make it a pet. Because when I picked it up, it was really friendly to me.
Well, yeah, you tasted delicious.
Yeah. I was hoping you keep it around for the next night. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm going to segue on to this other story that's connected, and this isn't quite so amusing, really. This is quite pathetic in the true sense of the word, evoking, you know, a sense of sympathy, because this is from Utah, from October 2018. Utah toddler puts more than $1,000 in the shredder. And this
where
a couple called Ben and Jackie Belknap of Salt Lake City discovered that the money they'd been putting aside for football season tickets, they put aside $1,060, which at the time, it says here in the news story, was £810. And they were searching for this missing money, and they were horrified to find that it was torn to pieces. And it was their little two-year-old son, Leo, who helps with shredding the junk mail. And he thought he was being helpful by doing this. So, I mean, there's a little picture of it there with all the notes shredded, and there's a little picture of him as well. He looks like an angel. He wouldn't do anything wrong, but, of course, that connected with me because we've got a two-year-old, and I can well imagine that happening. But it's one of those stories where I want to laugh and I want to, not exactly cry, but, you know, I want to think, oh, dear, that's so terrible for that family to happen.
You know, I have the Homeland Security clearance, actually, believe it or not, and I also have NAIDS clearance. They do random background checks on me, and each one costs $20,000 for shredding. I'm authorized by the government. I have clearance. But anyway, one year they spent more on my background checks than they paid me. So it's pretty crazy. They spent like $60,000 doing a background check on me that year. 3 background checks. But anyway, yeah, that happened to us. This guy was shredding, and all he saw, all these $100 bills going through the shredder, going down the belt. And he picked about 6 or 7 of them up and stuffed them in his pocket. And yeah, they caught him on the camera. He got fired instantly.
Gosh. And Johnny, how come you got this clearance? What's that all about? What's that for? Of course, I don't know whether you can say on air, but you can.
I smell a government shill.
Well, I have Homeland Security clearance. I can walk through any border, any port. I can walk onto an airplane, an airport. I can walk right through, just show them my badge. And I can go right onto the tarmac and everything. Because I'm a longshoreman.
You're a longshoreman. Yeah. I see. Yeah. Yeah.
But my other job, my day job, I work in a giant recycle factory for 34 years. Yeah, I have all that shredding certificate and clearance. For that, I can shred money. So there.
Johnny?
Yes.
Johnny, I think Hillary's got a job for you. There's plenty of money to be made shredding and deleting stuff for her.
Hey, Cruzy,
I'm sure you'll do fine.
Cruzy, have you ever seen the movie District 9 where the aliens land over Johannesburg or their ship gets stuck?
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. I wasn't too impressed.
Johnny was watching that in preparation for our chat.
Yes.
By our standards, it wasn't too bad.
Cruzy.
Yes.
I was just wondering your comment there about Hillary. I'm wondering if you are in receipt of Russian funding for that comment.
No.
So you deny it. That means you are.
I can't.
That's not very convincing, Cruzy.
No, that's right.
I'll give you the answer they taught. I mean, not they taught me. The answer.
There we go.
Just the answer. I can neither confirm or deny that.
So is there that's a Cruzy dossier somewhere?
Where do you think I got my Russian helicopter?
Oh, true.
Oh, absolutely, yes. We didn't know it was Russian until that moment. You've given the game away.
Cruzy is actually a famous author. He had a big book signing there at the local library, and they banned him for life.
What's the book? What was the book?
All of them.
All of them.
They weren't impressed.
I want some copies of them, Cruzy, because I want you on the show as an interviewee about your books.
Well, they're technically not my books, but I signed them anyways.
Could you send me draft copies?
Other people call it plagiarism. I just call it borrowing. Because that's what libraries do, isn't it?
They do lending, don't they?
You know,
I do the borrowing. They do the lending.
We all want to make our mark, and I think Cruzy has done that.
That's true.
Hey, I also found the first helicopter that can go from South Africa to America to London without refueling in stealth mode.
Yes.
It's a nice piece of machinery. It was obviously the South Africans fixed it up a bit because the Russians couldn't do a good enough job on the machine, so we fixed it up. And I know Johnny will love that because he's got the highest respect for South Africans.
Okay. What did you do to it? Was it anti-hijacking technology?
Well, that's for a start. But it hasn't got any wheels, so they were confused when they tried to hijack it and put it on bricks. So, yeah, it's a bit more difficult to hotwire a helicopter. Too many wires. So pretty safe in South Africa.
Was it designed by Rhodes Scholars?
I'm not sure. Oh, it was designed by Russians, fixed up by South Africans.
Well, you've done very well piloting it all that way, Cruzy. That's very good.
He's quite a pilot.
Yeah.
He really is.
I'm telling you, that's probably 25, 30 hours of flying without catching a break.
No, he has a hyperspace button, which I was really impressed with.
It's got a button called Automagic Pilot. So works for me.
Automagic pilot.
Automagic, yes.
Yes, yes. Excellent.
That does it have works. Ludicrous speed like on Spaceballs?
No. It's semi-ludicrous at the moment. I'm working on another jet engine.
Oh, okay, cool.
You mean you're working on it as you speak to us at the moment?
No, I've got minions doing that for me.
Uh-huh.
Yes. We almost crashed because the automatic pilot button, it has like five flipper guards that you have to flip over. Then you have to flip the other one. Then you have to flip the other one. Then you finally get to the button. We almost crashed by the time you got to the button.
I would just be happy if you keep your cat away from me because it's difficult to fly and handle a cat at the same time. It's, you know, if I throw him out the window, he's going to be a very thinly sliced cat.
Hey, Grizzly, when you hold him like that, you look like the man that runs Spectre in the old James Bond movie.
Dr. Evil.
Well, there was a period in the American movie industry when South Africans were all the bad guys, after it became unfashionable for all the Russians to be the bad guys. For a little while there, we were the bad guys.
Yeah, y'all were in
Danny Glover and...
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. We just watched that a little while ago. Lethal Weapon 2.
That became unfashionable, and now it's all the British guys that are the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know? So they finally saw the light.
Well, we're very good at speaking in a very evil way like this, you see. We put on this kind of slightly far back accent, and we can therefore express ourselves in a way that sounds quite dastardly and mischievous.
I'm scared right now.
I'm getting nervous. You need to calm down. I'm getting a little nervous over here.
Remember in that movie Joe Pesci was in the back seat? You know how he's always bugging that music?
Yeah.
He goes to Danny Glover. He goes, "You know what your problem is?" He goes, "You're black. You're black."
Okay.
He was doing the South African accent there. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to brag, but I do a pretty good South African accent.
You do? Can you do John Wayne? Can you talk like an American?
No.
Yeah, you do South African accents really well for a Russian agent.
Yeah. It's years of practice, sir.
He's a double triple agent.
The Russians are very thorough.
Have you got the passport with Russian agent written on it?
No, but I know at one stage they tried to land some Russian agents in uniform, prawn uniforms, but that sort of didn't work out, apparently.
Hey, Caruso, you know the actor that was in that movie he was talking about did play an American in the A-Team. He played Murdoch, the crazy guy.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, he did. I think only half of the A-Team was really American because Liam Neeson is Irish and that guy's South African.
Wow, he does a really good American accent.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. You can't do that, Cruz? You can't sound like me?
No. And it's sort of by choice.
I'm just joking.
It's just very difficult. Nobody can do any American accent properly, I think. There's so much variety in America.
What's up yet? You haven't done a what's up?
Oh, you know, I don't really do that anymore. I do... I do now.
You don't do what's up? I thought that was your catchphrase.
Yes, I used to do that. Do you know that, what's his name? I can't say his name, the comedian. He was listening to The Iron Show and he thought I was a real idiot. And he made that movie and he did the what's up exactly like me. What's his name? I can't say his name. He's a famous comedian actor. He did The Waterboy.
Jim Carrey?
Yeah, oh. No, The Waterboy.
Adam Sandler.
Yeah. I got through the grapevine that he had heard The Iron Show, and he thought I was an idiot, but he was laughing, so he thought he would incorporate that into one of his movies. And he does it just like me, exactly like me.
Yeah.
I want to hear about Jeff a little bit, because a lot of people don't know who he is. He's a famous strongman. He bends frying pans. He breaks baseball bats. He bends big bars. How do you do that, Jeff? How do you do that?
Well, you have to train. I've trained with weights since I was in high school, which is a long time ago. Train with weights first to get a strength base, and then you got to do specific exercises to toughen your hands up and strengthen your hands. Like right now, I'm working on one that I've only been able to do a few times, but I can break what's called a number 6 jack chain with my middle finger only.
Whoa!
And it takes 350 or more pounds to break it.
Wow, I broke one with a forklift one time, but I couldn't imagine a human being breaking one of those. Wow.
Yeah, it feels weird. You can kind of feel your finger moving around a little bit, but your joints are stronger than you can imagine. You just got to get your mind around the pain tolerance.
Oh, because it hurts.
Everything hurts, yeah, pretty much everything hurts, but you get used to it. It actually hurts less in a performance because you're jacked up on adrenaline and things like that.
The most impressive thing I've ever seen you do is curl up a frying pan. I couldn't believe that. I just couldn't believe my eyes. How do you curl up a frying pan? You rolled it up into a roll. It looked like a burrito or a crepe Suzette when you were done.
Uh-huh. The grandmaster I trained with in Houston, I've seen him roll a frying pan up so tight that he was able to pop the handle off and stuff all of it into a reusable water bottle like you use when you exercise. And he was able to screw the lid on top.
That's just incredible.
I saw it with my own eyes. Yeah. And he's a little 60-year-old guy.
Yeah.
You never know he was strong until you grab a hold of him. Then he feels like a brick wall.
I think that you have this anointing from God like Samson. That's what I think it is. I think half of it's supernatural. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that's some of it. The other part of it is it's hard for me to do. It doesn't come easy. And that keeps me from getting a big head.
Oh, because you're really struggling when you're curling up that frying pan. It's not easy.
Do you bend it a bit to start with? Get it softer?
Oh, no. No, I start off in front of the audience.
Do people get scared of you? Intimidated?
No, because I don't think I have the voice or demeanor that's intimidating.
Once you bend all this metal and break these baseball bats in front of these people, don't you, like, kind of stealthily tell them about Jesus?
Oh, yeah, I preach a gospel message, usually. Yeah. Unless I'm at a school, you know, schools don't usually allow that, so I do something else to encourage them.
It's definitely a ministry, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. And I'm trying to work with my church this next year to go to parts of the community that where people wouldn't be able to get to our church and still preach the gospel to them along with the strong man message. That's what we're kind of working on now. That's been on my heart for a couple years. So I think we have some inroads into like the bad part of town. We're going to go in there and preach the gospel to those kids after we do the strong man shows. And my church is going to help me do that. So I think it's going to be a pretty cool deal.
It's really good. It's going to impress those types of kids.
Jeff, I have a question.
Yeah.
What if somebody gets to heaven, like a young kid gets to heaven and he says to Jesus, Jesus asks him, so why did you decide to follow me? And this kid says, well, there was a guy that bent a frying pan and he led me to believe that I didn't come forward. Something bad's going to happen to me, like bending me like a frying pan.
Well, it wouldn't have been me that said that.
It's not in that context that you bend the frying pans, right?
No. I just use that all to get their attention. And while I've got them enraptured, I give them the gospel message. Yeah. No, I don't intimidate anybody.
I'm just joking.
But I tell you what you would probably like. I bend horseshoes over my leg.
Oh, yeah. You sent me a horseshoe.
Wow.
Yeah.
But
I actually have one on our mantelpiece. I have a bent one there. Yeah, sure. By the way, if anybody's interested to listen to an interview we had with Jeff, we talked about this in some depth. So please do go back through the archives at TMR and listen to that interview with Jeff Bankins. And as
a
consequence of that interview, yeah, that's right. You sent me a number of things that you bent, and one was a horseshoe. It's amazing. It sits there on the mantelpiece as I speak.
And I've never seen such a long address in my life.
Yeah, that's right.
Why don't you just go work for the company that makes the straight pieces of metal and just bend them horseshoe shape? Then you're at least bending it to the proper form.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but what I do with horseshoes now, I bend them out flat, and then I am able to put them between my legs after I bend them on top of my leg and twist it around.
Well, a poor horse must be looking at that going, what's he doing with my shoes?
Yeah.
That was expensive Nikes that I got off the street for $50. Yeah, this guy's just bending them to pieces. I didn't even put shoelaces on yet.
So, Jeff, if somebody like has a church or something, they want you to come to their church or their function, how do they get a hold of you?
They can go to my website and contact me or get me on Facebook or YouTube. I have all those things.
What's your website?
JeffTRexBankins.com.
JeffTRexBankins.com.
Yeah. BankenS.
I think that's an incredible ministry. It blows me away.
Johnny.
Yes.
You've done most things in your life. Have you ever been a strong man as well?
No, I'm not that strong. When you become a longshoreman, and they call it initial processing, they put you through all these torture tests. And one of the tests is they make you turn this giant metal wheel. It's a giant steel wheel that weighs 1,000 pounds, and it's got bicycle pedals on it. And then you have to crank it. And they time you and see how long it takes for you to pass out.
Wow.
Yeah. I cranked it 2 minutes before I saw stars and dropped. And then I was unconscious for about 30 seconds and they woke me up.
Sounds like what Conan had to do when he was a little boy. Did y'all remember seeing that from a long time ago?
Oh, yeah. He was cranking that mill. He had the giant log, you know, hooked to this circular mill, and he had to push it. And he started pushing it when he was a little kid, and it showed him, you know, 15 years later, you know, he's a grown man, and he's gigantic, and he's just cranking that mill. That is so cool. I think Jesus looked like Conan. I think he was intimidating. I really do, because I mean, think about it, how he tore up the temple and nobody fought back, you know, because they were scared of him.
That's a good point.
And Isaiah, it really says that he was ugly. So I think he was big and ugly and scary looking like Conan. People were actually afraid of him. That's what I think. He was like,
I've seen a painting of him. I've seen a painting of him, and he's very, very good looking. He's got blonde hair and blue eyes.
He looks like he's from Europe or America.
That's right. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Folks, we are actually approaching midnight, so we need to get ready for our toast. I hope you're all ready.
Ready.
Okay, well, I'm delighted to see that our guests from earlier on in the show have been able to join us again, just in time for our annual toast here as the clock strikes 12. Each year, as listeners will know, we pour a glass of champagne to see in the new year. But this year, a listener from France who works in the winemaking industry just outside Avignon has very kindly sent me a rare bottle of Côte de Rhône Vintage 2016 for us to enjoy on this very show. So, friends, if you'd like to raise your glasses, I shall pour you a glass of this choice wine. Jeff, would you raise your glass?
Raised. Ready.
Andy.
Thank you.
Cruzy.
Thank you, thank you.
GK.
Cheers, mate.
Mark.
Yep, okay.
Frank.
Yeah, here we go.
Excellent. Johnny.
Yes.
And the cat, Chili.
Chili. My Morgie.
To the new year!
Happy New Year! Year.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Year.
2019, oh yeah, baby!
Happy New Year to you! And to all those listening, Happy New Year to everybody out there.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah!
It's my cat!
You said I want more.
More?
You want more? You want more?
Now I spotted something.
I mean, I faked that Mexico trip, didn't I? It sounded like I was really there.
Did you really fake it?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
No. And I faked every single photograph I put on Facebook. No, it was all true.